B-Pod Studios.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic. It's time now for Cuz Radio.
What up, Cuz?
Deshaun Jackson gets a block! Are you kidding?
Talking with the Cuz.
Go, Cuz. How you doing?
Stairs rips one into the night.
Stolen by the doctor. Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocks the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
Look, Cuz, don't even try it, okay?
Now, here's Anthony Gargano.
Why don't you get the hell out of here, Cuz?
What is going on, everyone? Welcome on in to 97.5 The Fanatic. This is the Anthony Gargano Show. I am Hunter Brody, filling in for the Cuz all week. Connor Thomas is producing today's show, filling in for the Chunis all week as well. So we have you covered. We're excited. And how one day makes such a big difference. Connor and I were joking around yesterday before we left the studio. All we need is a Phillies win and a Braves loss to juice up where the fightin' Phils are. And that's exactly what we got as we are witnessing the Phils 3 games back of the wild card, 3.5 games back of the division after taking down the Washington Nationals by a score of 7-4. No JT Realmuto in the lineup, but you had your ace. You had your number one guy, Zach Wheeler. Didn't have a Zach Wheeler-type performance, though, and quite frankly, it hasn't been that way all August long. As you dive back into his game log and you discuss what he's done, hasn't been pretty. And we talked about his innings pitched. We talked about how much you had to rely on him so heavily throughout the entire season. Last night, he gave you 6 innings. After the 5th, I tweeted this out before he went out in the 6th. He even batted as well. I'm thinking, you know what? Not his night tonight. Not Zach Wheeler's night. Joe Girardi continues to push that button, though, and it worked out tremendously. He threw about 8 pitches in the 6th, and it was quick. But after 5, he allowed 5 hits, 4 earned runs, and 4 walked batters. A lot of full counts early on. Walked the bases loaded early on. And that's after the Phils had a 3-run lead. So Bryce Harper hits a 2-run bomb. You tack on another run. Your ace has a 3-run lead to start things off against the depleted Washington Nationals squad, and he's walking the bases. It did not look pretty, but getting through 6, considering the circumstances after 5, was impressive, and you desperately needed that to happen. Looking at some of his other outings, though, against the Rays, he went 8 innings, allowed 5 earned runs, 10 hits, struck out 10, but allowed 2 home runs. Dating back to Arizona, 6 2/3, 6 earned runs. Dating back to Cincinnati, 6 innings pitched, 4 earned runs. He's running out of gas a bit, but still has enough to hold the fort down because it's Zach Wheeler. How much is left, though? And that's one of my concerns as we look forward to whatever's going to happen. Here's what I know, though. I've seen this story 6 billion times this season where they pull you close enough to make you wonder what if. Where now you're looking through the Atlanta Braves schedule, you're looking at the Cincinnati Reds, the St. Louis Cardinals, you're diving deep into the opponent's schedule. Possibly do you have a chance? I've seen this a billion times, and I've been let down a billion times. With that all being said, let's get foolish. Let's get silly. And let's just appreciate the moment. That's what I do during this Philly season. Let's just live in the moment. I said it during the New York Mets series. I actually hosted on these very airwaves right after that sweep. It was a Sunday afternoon game. The sweep happened against the Mets at Citizens Bank Park. And there were caller after caller after caller saying, how far could we go? If they take this division, can they win a first round game? And I'm saying, cool the Jets. Let's live in the moment and just appreciate that this is a great feeling. The rise of the fan base is awesome. Red October, it's just a good vibe. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves because they're eventually going to lose a baseball game. That 8-game winning streak isn't going to continue for the rest of eternity. You see the Dodgers, you see the Reds coming up, so there will be adversity hit, and that's what happened. So right now, I just want to appreciate the moment that it's August 31st. We're one day from September, and it might be fake little tiny bit optimism, tiny, silly, little, tiny, minute optimism, but they're hanging around. I don't believe in it. Me, personally, I don't believe in it, but just the fact that my goal every year is get me to football season with baseball that I can at least put some sort of emotion to, where we're not watching Baltimore Orioles version of baseball, Diamondbacks, Colorado Rockies. Give me something. We got something. And this is what they do. They keep you involved in this tug of war action pretty much nightly. The problem is you got Matt Moore on the bump tonight. What's going to happen? I say this now, and he's going to end up winning the baseball game. That's what happens with this team, though. Everyone I've expected to cool off. Here's Ronald Torres last night with a triple that knocks in three runs. Here's Jankowski playing. Brad Miller with a bomb. Everyone that I said 3 months ago, this isn't going to last forever, they keep producing in their own way. Here's the issue, though. Because they're utility players and they're playing every day way too much than they should be playing, they are playing to their max capacity. I do have to admit that Ronald Torres, for the length of time that he's been producing, it's pretty stellar. But when a utility player plays to his highest capability, I think you get 500 baseball. That's why they're utility guys. You're using these players way too much. The Nick Maytons, the Luke Williams, the Jankowskis, the Torreses, the Brad Millers even. When you play these guys every day, even though they're playing the best they can, well, the best they can isn't very good. That's why they're utility players. That's why you're where you're at right now. But ultimately, they're three games above 500. I wouldn't be surprised in a couple days if we're looking at it and they're 500 again, because it's been the flow of the season. I'm watching every night, though. And I told you yesterday, Connor, when you think about the Chunis train, because that's the best way to describe the Phillies on this station. The Chunis train, for me, we got the estimate yesterday. And I was wondering and questioning, was the estimate for the train worth putting that much money into something so beaten down? Is it worth putting $5,000 into this car, or should I just get a new one? That's the question that was asked. And I'm still somewhat conflicted. I don't have the answer just yet. Connor, good morning.
Morning, man.
How you doing today?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. The Phillies are 3.5 games back of the division and 3 games back of the wild card, which yesterday I claimed was just a false hope. The wild card opening up that discussion was false hope. Or was I wrong, though?
So if you listen to the Johnny Cage show this morning, you already know where I stand. And I'm catching a lot of flack for it, but I am still out on the Phillies. I don't think they have a chance to make the playoffs. And for me, what weighs into it more, the 131 games they've already played is what weighs into it for me. What they've done recently, you get recency bias. But ultimately, when it comes down to these stretch September runs, pushing for October baseball, water levels out. That's the beautiful thing about a long season like Major League Baseball has, 162 games. Water finds its level, and the Phillies' level is not reaching the playoffs, especially with this roster that they currently have with all the injuries, the COVID issues, stuff like that. I just don't see them having enough to make it. When the Chunis train was in my shop, I claimed it was totaled, so that's why we sent it down the road for a different estimate, but I still don't see how they reach the playoffs. I like how they're playing. I want them to, too. Don't get me wrong. I want them to make the playoffs, but I don't see a way they get there with their inconsistent play.
I absolutely agree with you. I don't see a way they do it. I've seen enough of a sample size. That's one thing I really hold my hat on. I like to dive back and say, okay, well, what tells me that something's going to change? I've seen this team play for not only just this year. This has been a handful of seasons with this unit, with this core, where a common theme is they fail late and they don't come up with enough wins. And a lot of these series, they let slip away. If you go back to the Pittsburgh series, you win 1 of 3. Now, that started an 8-game win streak, but that cannot happen. We will dive back to that Arizona Diamondback series as where the momentum was truly lost, I feel, at the end of September when we're not watching the Phillies in the postseason. It'll go back to the desert. That's where they lost it. That's where everything kind of went south. And yeah, you know what? They have a 4-game win streak, and I got to give them credit for beating up on the opponents, because there are times where they don't do that. Ultimately, though, I do feel very similar to you, where I've seen enough to know. At the same time, I'm willing to open up to this foolishness of, come on now, here we go. And I'm aware that it's not real. It's fake fun. And I'm okay for fake fun. Why not? Why can't I? Why can't I every night go, ho, 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 we got a chance? even though I don't truly believe we have a chance.
Yeah, I can't buy into the fool's gold. It's not the person I am. Maybe that makes me jaded.
I'm not buying
into it. No, you just said you were opening up to it.
In a joking matter to have some fun.
I can't do it because I'm going to start to believe. I'm going to allow myself. I give myself a little taste and I'm going to believe again. And they're going to end up hurting me. Because you saw it. They had a hot stretch right before the All-Star break where they absolutely whooped up on the Chicago Cubs. They go to Boston. They play really well against the Red Sox. It looks like the offense has finally broken out. And then you come out and you lose 2 or 3 to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Then you go on an 8-game win streak, and you look like you finally figured it out. It looks like they're really hot, and they were, and then you go out and you get swept by the Arizona Diamondbacks. Every time they have the ups, they fall back and they have the downs, because ultimately what this team has proved to us over the first 131 games of the season is they're about 500, and they're very inconsistent. And all we've seen for the Braves in the second half of the season is that they have become a wagon of a team that refused to lose multiple games or multiple series in a row. So what part of that equation has the Phillies catching them? The only thing that isn't really in consideration, or wasn't when I decided I was out, I thought the wild card was out of reach, and now it's very much in play mathematically, but I'm still thinking they're done.
Okay, so does that open up more optimism when you look at the Cincinnati Reds, who are fighting with the St. Louis Cardinals right now, two teams ahead of the Phillies in the wild card race as it stands today? The LA Dodgers are 83-49 with the first wild card spot. Cincinnati Reds in the second spot at 71-62. You have the Padres that are insanely struggling, the St. Louis Cardinals, and then your Philadelphia Phillies, 3 games over .500 and 3 games back. Does that open up a legitimate avenue? Do you believe the wild card is now in play to sneak on in to the playoffs? Everything you say is absolutely right. I don't have a counter. I can't even push back. I believe everything you're saying. I'm just more open to the dumb excitement. I'm just open to the fool's gold. Let's just run with it because, well, we got 2 more weeks until football, and we'll see what ends up happening. Here's my fear. With Zach Wheeler, you need him going, and you have no idea what Aaron Nola you're going to have every night. Zach Eflin, the whole knee issue came back up, and then the COVID stuff hit this team. Marshawn's playing over Andrew Knapp. That might be a positive at the end of the day because Andrew Knapp is unplayable, in my opinion. I know you want to dive through the ERAs of these starting pitchers with JT compared to Andrew Knapp. Andrew Knapp hits 150. You cannot play Andrew Knapp. It's just unplayable. And he hasn't even been good behind the plate defensively. There's been balls that's been getting through him. JT as well. I've been underwhelmed with him. Even with the struggling JT, I'll take that over Andrew Knapp a billion out of 1 billion times. If I'm going to get a 31-pitch first inning from Zach Wheeler where full counts are consistently happening, that fastball command was not existent early on, do you have that chance? Is that another reason why it's even uglier? Because you don't even, what, Ranger Suarez? He added a slider. Whoop-dee-doo. I like the fact that he added a slider. He needs to if he's going to be a starter. And just to throw this out there for some statistics, the previous 2 starts of Ranger Suarez, he threw 6 sliders in 185 pitches. His last outing, he threw 13 sliders in 95. He's been juggled around the bullpen, closer role, long relief. If he wants to start, he needs that extra pitch, and it's clear that he has brought that to the table. It's going to take a lot longer than just a handful of starts to do that. I don't know without Zach Wheeler, though, how this is going to happen. And the trajectory of this August run with Wheeler is he's running out of gas.
Yeah, unfortunately, you had to ride him a lot during the summer months to get to this point because Aaron Nola has had a really rough year. Zach Eflin has spent some time on the IL with that knee issue. And you're dealing with a back end that was Vince Velasquez at points, Matt Moore, Chase Anderson, Ranger Suarez converting from a reliever to a starter. So you just, honestly, you have no other option than hoping you can continue to ride Wheeler. But you're like, you've got the flat tire and you have the space saver put on, and you're just hoping you can make it to the destination. It's still a nice car. You're still driving a BMW, but with the space saver on there, your mileage is limited when it comes to Zach Wheeler. So I don't know if he'll continue to hold up. He's gotten away with it recently just because he is such a dominant pitcher normally, but It's going to be a tough spot of the rest of the Philly season. Another reason why I still think that they're not bound for the playoffs.
There were three decisions last night with Joe Girardi that I did not necessarily approve. Well, I guess two. One I understood. You just didn't have many options. The first one was Zach Wheeler in the sixth. I wouldn't have personally done it. It worked out. I have to tip my cap. And he's your guy. If you're talking about the Aaron Nolas and the Zach Wheelers of your staff, if you're going to have a longer leash, I'm okay with that compared to giving the leash to Matt Moore, giving the leash to some of your fours and your fives in your rotation. So I didn't personally love it. He was at 87 pitches after five, four walk batters, four earned runs. I would have went in another direction. It worked out. Number two was after Connor Brogdon got into some trouble there, Archie Bradley was the one that got selected to get out of the jam. I don't know what else you really could have done due to what bodies were available. I just didn't have a lot of faith in Archie Bradley considering what his last outing was like. Even though you've seen a rise in his play, you've seen some good action from Archie Bradley throughout this backstretch. His last outing was a bit ugly. Joe left him in too long, but he did what he needed to. He really did. He cashed in, bang, got some big timeouts, and Alvarado in the ninth. Not a big Alvarado guy. He can't be closing games. He can't throw strikes, and he puts runners on. That is recipe for disaster when you throw a lot of balls and give them free passes. My buddy was texting me throughout the entire ninth inning. Can't do it, Broads. Cannot put him in. And my response was, who would you put in then? And he responded with J.D. Hammer. He responded with Sam Coonrod. Anyone but. While I would have been okay with many options other than Jose Alvarado, you can't tell me J.D. Hammer was an obvious. You can't tell me Coonrod is an obvious. There's no obvious when Ian Kennedy is not available. So that's where Joe has his hands tied behind his back. What do you want him to do? Be a magician? Your closer's not there. Jose is your probably best option by default. I just don't love it because I've seen that story too many times.
Right, and he's a heart attack of a pitcher, Jose Alvarado. But Joe Girardi said it earlier in the season after a game in his post-game availability on why they like to use Alvarado in those spots. And basically, he feels with Alvarado, you're not going to give up the home run. You got two options. Either he's going to walk the guy. Well, three options. Either he's going to walk the guy, strike the guy out, or you're going to get a ball hit on the ground somewhere. It's just the nature of how he pitches. So you kind of swallow the wildness by basically taking the home run out of the equation. And that's why they like him in that closer role, because a home run is a game changer there. Walking two guys, if you have that getaway stuff, which he does, you can kind of get away with it at points. It's a heart attack for the fans, but it's an interesting perspective on how to use him as a reliever. I don't love it either. I wish we could have a Brad Lidge 2008 style guy come out who's going to be perfect all season long, but that guy doesn't exist. So, like you said, it was another example of Girardi's kind of, he's hogtied at this point by what his bullpen is. And luckily, the moves worked out last night.
I'll tell you what, he got out Juan Soto in the ninth. Good play by Marshawn to get the lead runner at second base. Very heads-up baseball, if you will. And Josh Bell looked as if he wanted no business being up at the plate. Those cuts were embarrassing. For such a good hitter, those cuts were not even close to being competitive. I'm not telling you it's easy to hit a 100-mile-per-hour fastball by a Jose Alvarado, though. I just expected a more competitive AB from their meat of their order. So that's the Philadelphia Phillies. I want to know from you, is it okay to have this silly, goofy, entertaining hope, even though you know it's not real? That's where I am. Do you look at the wild card as an actual possibility? And maybe you don't like my approach, and you truly believe in your heart of hearts they are in the fight, and it's not silly and goofy, it's real. It's also a day for the Eagles to trim down their rosters, or their roster, cut some players. We're going to keep an eye on that all show long. And also, we're going to play a game with you, the callers, and you can call in at 610-632-0975. We had FanFest tickets to give away all show long, and we're going to go through the Eagles roster, and we're just going to throw around some names. We're going to ask you if you believe they're going to get cut or they're going to stay. We're not going to give you, you know, the Jalen Hurtses of the world. That's an obvious. But more of those bubble players. How do you feel? You think they stay? You think they're cut? And that's where we begin today's show. 610-632-0975 is the phone number. to hop on board. We're going to have some fun today. Scott Lauber, who covers the Phillies for the Philadelphia Inquirer, will join us in the 1 p.m. hour. I want to get a thoughts on this run. There's some other things, too, that I really want to look at since he covers the team and dives a little bit deeper. I'm curious, have you seen real quick Bryson Stott and his numbers right now?
He is raking.
Wow.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Wow. I don't know if I should, ironically enough, as we're talking about the Phillies, get sucked into this, but I'm really curious what Scott Lauber has to say. He's tearing it up. Is this real? Is this a product of the double-A ball that he's playing in? What is it? But he's doing some special things. All right, 610-632-0975. We will talk about it all. Ryan, we will begin with you on the other side. You are listening to the Anthony Gargano Show. I'm Hunter Brody, filling in for the Cuss.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic. This is the Anthony Gargano Show. I'm Hunter Brody, filling in for the Cuss. The 10 a.m. hour is brought to you by Window Nation. Take advantage of Window Nation's 50% off sale on all style windows. Plus, make no down payment with no payments and no interest for 12 full months. Call 866-90-NATION or visit WindowNation.com. 610-632-0975 is the phone number. So we got some breaking news around the NFL world. I'm sure it'll continue to happen all throughout the day. The New England Patriots cut Cam Newton, and they are now rocking with Mac Jones as their starter. With Cam Newton, you kind of realized it was finished. It did not look like he felt comfortable out there anymore. The arm strength nowhere close to where it once was in his prime. And they tried it last season. I remember the first game they beat the Dolphins. And Josh McDaniels was utilizing Cam Newton in this way. That was a lot different from what they did with Tom Brady. And being a hockey guy that I was, I had so many teammates from the Boston area growing up that I cannot stand around the football season. And the amount of text messages I got, here we go again, we're building a new dynasty, no one's going to be able to stop Cam Newton. I just text them all now laughing, going, oh yeah, remember when you told me that next dynasty's coming? Their response though, yeah, just wait for Mac Jones. And I'm thinking, do you realize what you did with Tom Brady was so rare that every new quarterback from this moment on is not going to be able to duplicate what you witnessed over the last 20 years? But they're brainwashed is what they are. It goes back to sometimes when we talk about the left tackle and the offensive line in Philadelphia, I truly believe that we are brainwashed because we had it for so long and we have it consistently with so many Pro Bowl type left tackles and offensive linemen. We don't know what it's like to not for a long period of time. That's what the New England Patriots fans are going through right now. I like Mac Jones. I think he's got an arm. It'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But for Cam Newton, could you see a way that the Dallas Cowboys head in that direction knowing Dak Prescott is banged up?
Yeah, I don't know why you wouldn't make that call. I'm questioning why Cam Newton was not just kept as the backup in New England. That seems weird to me. There's got to be some other reason there that's not out right now, something with injury performance that we clearly aren't aware of, because he diced up the Eagles in week two of the preseason. So I don't understand. I understand starting Mac Jones, but I don't understand just outright releasing Cam Newton. If I'm Jerry Jones, I'm absolutely giving him a call, because while he's not what he used to be, the dude can still play. He was a starting quarterback in this league last year. He can still play football enough to be a backup.
Definitely. For a backup, I agree. If you got to use him for a sustained amount of time, I'd be worried, which is crazy because I remember when he was really dicing around that football in his prime for the Panthers, and it was special. He was legit in his prime, and that's what happens once you start getting these surgeries, these injuries, you get all banged up. It's crazy to see his downfall. I would have thought it would work better than this, to be honest with you, but it seems that's where he's at. He's backup quarterback, and if you need to for 3-4 games, maybe you can hold your own. Let me throw this your way. Just in this hypothetical world, I know the jokes are flying around, especially on our YouTube channel where you can watch us live on 97.5 The Fanatics YouTube page. Would you feel more comfortable with Cam Newton in a game or Joe Flacco in a game or Gardner Minshew in a game? Just if, let's say, Jalen Hurts was unavailable for one game.
Oh, are the YouTube people saying that's Howie Roseman's music? And
you want to be a quarterback factor?
Time to bring Cam in? No. It's a tough question because I don't know what Cam is with that shoulder. His throwing motion is so violent. And he has had so many injury issues since that MVP season he had with the Panthers. I really don't know what he is health-wise, and he never really looked fully himself last year. I'd rather take the two guys on know what they are than force Cam Newton into a system. And honestly, also looking at the Jalen Hurts angle of it, like Cam Newton is not good enough to start over Jalen Hurts, but it's a higher level to the Minshew conversation we kind of had yesterday. The Minshew persona and the stories that come along with Gardner Minshew is going to make him a fan favorite that people could clamor for him if Jalen Hurts struggles. That gets amplified a million times if you bring in Cam Newton, a former MVP who brought a team to a Super Bowl. So I don't really have any interest in him being anywhere near the
football
team.
No, I don't either. I was just saying more from just like a backup standpoint. How does he compare to what you have kind of thing? And yeah, it's fascinating. 610-632-0975. Brian Hoyer is now the Patriots backup. Would you rather have, I feel personally, maybe there's more to this personality, the way that he carries himself, the fashion, the press conferences. It's somewhat of a distraction to have him hanging around as a backup quarterback. Maybe is that an angle that Bill Belichick would take, or does that fit the narrative of Bill Belichick? The better talent should be there. I don't care about the personality. I don't care about the drama. I care about the best talent possible. I don't know. I'm just trying to look at all angles here from Bill Belichick making this decision.
Well, here's another one, and we don't know for sure at all. We may not know for a while, but the vaccination status of Cam Newton, could that possibly have played into it? If Bill Belichick, who runs a very strict organization and is very by the book and wants things his way, if there could be something going on with the vaccination status, and if Newton was to be not vaccinated, this is all speculation. We have no idea whether he is or is not. But could this play a factor in Belichick and other coaches throughout today ahead of the 4 p.m. cut deadlines, decision-making process on who to cut and who to keep?
1,000%. 1,000% I do. As you're seeing in Indianapolis, not to dive too deep into what's happening with Carson Wentz, but he's getting bashed. He's getting destroyed by a lot of the Indianapolis media because you talk about leadership and he's the one who's now not available for his team when you're talking about getting ready for the season because of making a decision. And, you know, it's just, it's something that I would imagine these NFL teams are going to honestly analyze because that's going to legitimately limit you when you're preparing. All right, 610-632-0975. This is the game today that we're going to play with our callers. And Ryan, thank you so much for holding on. We will start with you in just a moment. Just to give you an example. Now, with the quarterbacks, we basically know what's going to be your three quarterbacks getting into the season. But Connor, if I was to throw Jalen Hurts your way, he's going to stay.
I would keep him.
Yeah, Gardner Minshew, Joe Flacco.
Keep.
Jamie Newman. Does anyone even know who Jamie Newman is?
Who?
He is a quarterback.
Yeah, sorry, Jamie Newman. You're the odd man out here, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we're not going to go with the simple ones. I just don't want to give any of the ones that we're going to utilize.
Right. But we got three guys there, so we got to keep the running total. Because we have to make sure, we can't be keeping like 55 guys.
Right.
Got to be on the number.
Exactly. Okay, let's go to Ryan in Philly. Ryan, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Ryan, thank you so much for holding on.
Bros, what's going on, my man? How's your morning going?
It's going well. I got my Starbucks iced coffee to the left of me. I got the people tuning in, listening to the show. It's a good day.
Unreal. So, yeah, I just wanted to call in to get some of your guys' opinions. So, I called in specifically about the whole Mac Jones, Cam Newton drama. I have a live future, a couple live future bets for offensive rookie of the year. One being Devonta Smith at plus 3,000, and one being Mac Jones at plus 1,000. What do you guys think about Mac Jones coming in? Because I think anyone with a football brain knew that Mac Jones is eventually going to be the starter, and Cam Newton was kind of just dumb, like just if you watched that offense last year. But what do you think the expectations are for Mac Jones in terms of how well the Patriots will play with him as their quarterback this year?
Yeah, I mean, look, right or wrong, right now, especially after the era the New England Patriots just went through, there's expectations with Bill Belichick to be competitive in the fight. Now, if you look at the division, though, because a lot of those years, that's not to take away anything from Tom Brady, though. The Bills were pathetic. The Jets have been pathetic. The Dolphins were losing a lot of games, which I'm not saying that's why the Patriots had their dynasty. They were an outstanding football team on top of a poor division. But it's going to be more difficult now that you have the Josh Allen era that's going on with Sean McDermott in Buffalo. And it's going to be a bit tougher, even though the Dolphins have a weird quarterback situation based off a building from last year's season. You know, it's not going to be the easiest in the world. But with the expectations of where the New England Patriots are with Bill Belichick still being in the mix, you know, I would anticipate them to believe that they have a fighter's chance with Mac Jones, at least in the beginning, until they get a little bit more knowledge of their identity.
Yeah, and I know preseason, obviously preseason football is not something to hang your head on, but watching the Patriots beat the Eagles that bad with Mac Jones at the helm, you got to believe that he has some promise, or was that a knock on the Eagles? Not preparing. I know it's a preseason game.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Like, think about it from this perspective. If you're a rookie and you're playing, even though it's the preseason, you're a quarterback and you want to prove your worth to the fan base, to the coaching staff that already has the personality that they do, you're going to come out firing regardless who's on the other side with this attitude, with this edge to prove to everyone. So I think it's a combination of both. Playing poor talent, the Eagles just not having their strongest players out there, and Mac Jones coming in with an edge trying to prove to everyone that this is my job. But I don't put too much stock into what happened. We kind of discussed that a little bit yesterday. There are some signs that scare me with how many rushes they allowed, the yards per rush that they allowed. I don't know if that correlates to regular season football. We'll see, though, with the Eagles. That's definitely on my radar.
Cool. And I just got one more thing. Do you think the signing with Gardner Minshew is more of a knock on the confidence in Jalen Hurts, or just Flacco, or maybe just the whole situation in general?
I think it's just good value. If you see what the Eagles did with Carson Wentz, they drafted Jalen Hurts, and they told you, whether this is what they actually believe or not, cheap backup. Good, cheap backup. Well, Gardner Minshew is an extremely cheap backup for the next 2 years. Even though you have Flacco here, it's a cost-efficient move, and you traded a day-three guy. So I don't know personally how they feel about Jalen Hurts. The way that they've been reaching out about Deshaun Watson over the last few months would tell me that they're not absolutely 1,000% sold on him, but they're also very willing to utilize this year to find that out, Ryan. How about that? Before we let you go, I want to throw a name your way, and I want you to tell us if you believe they're going to make the roster or not.
Okay.
All right, how about this? We're going to go to the linebacker position. Sean Bradley.
I'm not too familiar, but I'm going to say yes.
Okay, you're going to say that he's on the team.
I think he makes the squad.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you, Ryan.
Do you think that linebacker?
Yes.
They need some guys.
That's true.
They need some guys there.
All right, Ryan, do you have FanFest?
He's still in the defense.
Do you have FanFest tickets?
I don't.
Okay, I'll put you on hold, man. Thank you so much. So Sean Bradley, that one's interesting. He was drafted late last year. He has the local ties with Tampa. That is a position of need. But he's hit or miss. I don't know exactly where he's going to fall. I'll be honest. That one's a tough one. I threw a tough one right off the bat.
Yeah, I think his ceiling probably with Eric Wilson coming in and Alex Singleton playing the way he did last year as a backup and a special teams guy. But I think what he showed his rookie year, he got some run because the linebacker core was terrible with the likes of Nate Gary out there. So I think you keep him around, you give him another season. He's heading into his second year. And he already got, but he got enough playing time his rookie season that you can start to see some development. He's a guy I wouldn't give up on just yet. And I'm not just saying that because he went to the same high school I went to and lives across the street from my mom back in beautiful Haynesport, New Jersey. I'm just, I think he's going to hang around for this season.
So that's exactly why you think he's hanging around.
And maybe it has something to do with it.
Yeah. Now, the problem is I want to start talking about some other linebackers right now, but I don't want to give away our game. So I'm somewhat in a pickle at the moment.
Oh, well, we can bring him up. Okay, can't make the full decision. Okay, we'll leave it up to the callers for the final call.
How about a Patrick Johnson? Now, he's getting a lot of buzz right now. At the end of that last preseason game, though, he got a bit banged up, and he was holding his bicep. He was flexing his hands a bit and trying to see if he can feel his fingers. I don't know his updated status at this very moment, but I did know that he was walking off the field in some serious pain there. He's a name at the linebacker position that a lot of beat reporters are high on.
Yeah, sixth-round pick out of Tulane, if I'm not mistaken, and he's shown that he's got some ability from what we've heard from camp. The tough thing is, these sixth-round pick guys, the later rounds that you're going to take a flyer on and put them on your 53-man roster, they got to be healthy. You can't have a guy come in and get banged up even in the slightest where he may underperform, because frankly, these guys are six-round picks because they were bubble guys to get drafted at all. So if he has issues with injury, he may end up being, unfortunately, a practice squad guy. But from what I've heard, he has the ability to play at this level. I kind of like him to make the roster.
So let's go to the running backs here, just because it basically is, like said, there's no debate on what's happening with the running back room after Jason Huntley was cut. You have your four guys. It's a strong four. I'm really excited for Miles Sanders, Boston Scott, Jordan Howard, and Gainwell. I really do believe there's something there where they bring some versatility. There's something unique to the table that all of them can do something different that can help out this offense. I'm really looking forward to Miles Sanders taking that stride, though. You know, I brought up my fear yesterday of the drop passes, of the fumbling issues. He's really got to put a big-time emphasis on that if he's going to be that three-down back that we would like. But there's so much uniqueness involved in what Boston Scott can do. I just hope he can do it in a game that's not against the New York Jets in the preseason and the New York Giants in the regular season. There's something, though, to Jordan Howard and that veteran presence. How about his story, though? He was going to be out of football. He was almost done, and here comes the Eagles picking up the phone. Hey, why don't you give it another shot? And he brings some toughness for sure.
Yeah, his pass blocking is a huge part of why he's still with this team. Now, do you see any chances that there's a surprise cut in there? A Boston Scott, because he kind of overlaps with how Kenneth Gainwell plays. A Jordan Howard, because like you said, he was kind of on the outs with football. You see them taking four?
Yeah, I do. I see them taking four. I don't see a way that any of these guys get cut. I would be really surprised if that was the case, especially knowing, first off, the position in general is well, I guess there's two ways to look at this. There's a lot of injuries to that position. At the same time, it's probably one of the easier positions to fill when there is a problem. And that's not to say you can plug and play any player and it'll be extremely successful. But if you were to see someone go down, to find someone, whether it's on the practice squad, to squeeze in there for some time, it's an easier position to fill for sure.
Right, but to the alternative point, like the guys you have backing up Miles Sanders right now, Jordan Howard aside, you look at a Boston Scott, you look at a Kenneth Gainwell, these are slight, smaller players that have the potential to get banged up playing in an NFL game with huge guys. So that would be the argument for keeping the four as well. Two of the guys you have backing up, your bell cow back, are a little bit smaller running backs, so you want to make sure you have that insurance on the roster. So, yeah, I can see it from both sides.
Yeah, and let's be realistic. If you're the Indianapolis coach, right, how many teams have Marlon Mack and Jonathan Taylor? And when my point of bringing this up is, if Miles Sanders goes down, what player can you rely on to maybe take more of the snaps? Who can hit the hole better? You know, who can bring that juice to the running back core? The answer is probably nobody as an individual. How many teams have that option, though, where if their number one back goes down, they have someone who can easily just grab the rock and just take over from there? One, there's always no names that do flash their name, which goes back to my original point. It's easiest to find someone at that position, but if you can, there might be a few out there, but it's not as if a lot of teams, though, have that just waiting right behind your Miles Sanders of the world.
Absolutely. So if we're just assuming, and we'll just take it ourselves, that there's going to be four running backs on, I think we're on the same page with that. All four of those guys make it. Last year, opening day roster, the Birds carried three guys, and they carried seven wide receivers. So if you're taking four running backs, we might be looking at a little bit tighter wide receiver core, and there's some questions on the back end of that bubble, too.
Yeah, for sure. I wasn't high on Jalen Reagor entering this season. It's weird. I was higher than most at the time of the draft. I saw the reaction of Justin Jefferson, And I saw what he did with the Minnesota Vikings this year, clearly. At the time of the draft, though, I thought there was a huge overreaction to everyone's just writing him off for no reason. Oh, well, he stunk at TCU. Well, there's a lot of reasons why there were some problems at TCU record-wise. They're playing their fourth quarterback. You know, things got real ugly there for his season. But ultimately, there was this reaction of he stinks right away without giving the guy a fair shot. Then we saw him play, and I saw the way Doug Peterson utilized him, and I was questioning, well, how can you have such a strong opinion when you knew he was going in plays to fail? The coaching staff was literally setting him up to fail, maybe by sort of like Joe Girardi. Hands are tied behind your back. What do you want me to do? We need someone on the outside. DeSean Jackson is hurt. You don't have your core. You're picking players up off the street. We need a player to play out there. He's our best option. Maybe it's just by we don't have any other options, but he was set to fail. Then after I saw him this season, I didn't like his attitude. I didn't like his attitude on social media. I'm going to prove everyone wrong. It felt he was very dedicated to the social media aspect. And I guess that's what happens when you're this age, growing up in this era of professional sports. It's not easy to tune all of that out. You're born with that in your system of social media. But then you watch him make these plays. We've never seen him make some of the plays that he's made in training camp ever yet. We've never seen, aha, that's the moment. That's the skill set. That's the catch. That's the ability. We haven't seen that since this training camp. Now that I've seen a bit more, I'm starting to get a little bit more excited for the Jalen Reagor to come this year. Plus, he's not the number one receiver. You have Devontae Smith stretching out the field. You have Quez Watkins and his speed, too. It's not as much stress and emphasis on Jalen Reagor has to be it's the Justin Jefferson. That's Devontae Smith's role. So, 610-632-0975. We're looking at the Eagles roster as it is the day to make some cuts, and we'll see who gets cut around the league as well. The big news so far, Cam Newton, not with your New England Patriots. He is available. Maybe the Dallas Cowboys pick him up. 610-632-0975 is the phone number. We're giving away FanFest tickets all day long. This is the Anthony Gargano Show, and I'm Hunter Brody filling in for the Cuz.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic. This is the Anthony Gargano Show. I'm Hunter Brody filling in for the Cuz. 610-632-0975 is the phone number. We're talking Phils. I want to know if it's okay to get sucked into the Phillies jokingly, knowing that it's messy, knowing there's no real chance, but I'm sucked in because, well, it's fun and it's entertaining, and I'd rather do that than be Connor, who just says, it's not happening.
No, come over to the dark side.
No.
Dude. It's not happening.
No.
You're only hurting yourself.
So that's one conversation. And, of course, the Philadelphia Eagles, and they're making cuts today. And it's pretty simple, though. I want to know what you're scared of with this Eagles team. Your fear. On top of that, maybe what you're excited about. Let us know how you're feeling about the Philadelphia Eagles today as we anticipate some cuts and we're getting closer to the season. 610-632-0975. Let's go to the front. Let's go to Alex in Jersey. Alex, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Alex.
How you doing, guys? How you doing?
Doing well. How are you doing today?
Good, good. Got a question for you. Around the draft that we picked up Landon Dickerson.
Yes.
What is the update, and do you think that he may have a spot on the top roster, or will he be part of the squad?
Yeah, so he's definitely going to be part of the squad. That was news yesterday. It's weird. I think you read my mind, because during the break I said, I'm really going to touch on Landon Dickerson in this next segment here, and it's crazy that just happened. But Yeah, so he'll be there. I just, look, it's Isaac Seumalo, and that's the left guard spot. I wonder what's, you know, where he's going to fit. Is it possible that he takes his job eventually? There is fear of the knees, and maybe they're going to take their time and do everything they can to make sure he's 100% healthy before he gets some run at it. But I would anticipate, based off of the information we are being told by the Eagles and us reading into some of the news, that he's going to be a part of this offensive line this season.
Now, my other question is with him not seeing any preseason, are they extremely working on him hard between now and week one or week two?
Define working on him hard, like putting him through a lot of physical work and a lot of physical drill. I would guess they're going to take this in a more softer approach than running him into the ground based off of the severity of these injuries over the last handful of years. With that said, though, I do anticipate seeing him this season. I really do.
And hopefully he makes a big part of this team.
I think he will long-term, too. Isaac Seumalo, I was listening to the John Kincaid show this morning, and Jamie Lynch brought up, the bro brought up, that Isaac Seumalo is just a guy. And that's very true. He is your average standard left guard that you can get by, especially when you have a stacked offensive line the Eagles do. But Landon Dickerson, skill set-wise, as an individual, could probably, you know, as we talk more long-term, could blow Isaac Seumalo out skill set-wise. So he's going to be a piece. It just depends on if he can stay upright throughout the season, of course.
Yeah, hopefully.
All right, Alex, thank you so much. Do you have FanFest tickets?
I do not.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in. I'll put you on hold. We have some breaking news.
Yes, we do. The Eagles have made a trade. They're trading Matt Pryor at a 7th-round selection in the upcoming draft for a 6th-round pick to the Indianapolis Colts.
Wow.
So Carson Wentz, if he's healthy, gets a lineman there from Philly.
Okay, no surprise. When we were going to go through this list, Matt Pryor was an obvious out for me. He wasn't going to make the team. So Howie Roseman does some dealing, does some moving around, and takes Matt Pryor to Indianapolis with Carson Wentz. You know what's crazy? He played a playoff game against that was against Seattle, right?
Right.
Yeah, he legitimately played and started. And he wasn't that embarrassing, that performance. He really wasn't. I remember him having a huge blow-up block at the goal line for a big-time play for the Eagles in that game. They didn't lose because of that. They lost because Carson Wentz goes down from a Jadeveon Clowney hit early, and he never really got to know other than Josh McCown running around with a torn hamstring, was it?
Yeah. See, yeah, Pryor's not a guy that doesn't belong in the NFL. Like, there's a spot for him on some roster. It just wasn't here. He was going to get cut, and you move him, and you give up a 7th-round pick to get a 6th-round pick back. You're getting something for nothing, basically. So it's a great move by Howie Roseman, and it affects the guy you were just talking about, Landon Dickerson, because Matt Pryor wore number 69, which is Dickerson's number in college. So now maybe Landon, who was just activated, can take over his old number again.
The last thing I was thinking about was jersey numbers today.
Well, there you go. We got a little jersey number potential news.
That is big news.
That's great for him.
We should have opened the show with that. Unfortunately, we did not have the news in time at 10 o'clock to do so, because that's an opener.
Right. That number, though, makes the Dickerson jersey a little bit higher selling, I think, in my opinion. So we'll see how that goes.
You buying one of those?
I might. I might. If he goes over to 69, I might have to get one of those jerseys.
Are you a jersey purchaser?
Yeah, I like a jersey.
Okay.
I don't have anyone on the active roster, though. So, and I'm holding out because I don't know. In a rebuild, you can lose guys certainly here and there. I don't have an active jersey.
I used to be bigger in the jersey department. I think it's died out on me more and more. There's some that are extremely acceptable, though. You can never go wrong with the Bryce Harper. You can never go wrong with the Claude Giroux. I don't think you can go wrong with the Fletcher Cox or a Brandon Graham. The Zach Ertz one. See, I where did I have this debate with somebody about a Zach Ertz jersey? I really can't remember. But is Zach Ertz a jersey? Even though it might happen where he gets traded and it gets ugly, can you wear that here in Philly forever, like a Claude Giroux and a Fletcher Cox?
Right, yeah, of course you can. He caught the go-ahead touchdown in the Super Bowl. Yes, you can wear his jersey for as long as you want.
I agree. I agree completely. I think that there was a debate that you can't. Zach Ertz doesn't fit in that category. I'm going, this guy's going down as one of the best tight ends we've ever seen.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, let's go to Mike in Pottstown. Mike, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you doing today?
Good. Yeah, I just wanted to check in here. You know, with the cuts coming up today and the Eagles wide receivers, we've all been through year after year. At least we did the right thing, you know, in getting Devontae Smith this year. But besides that, you know, I don't really know who's going to be on the team. I mean, nobody really, really stands out for me. Obviously, Quez had a nice preseason, you know, a nice game and stuff. And Rager, we're keeping him. So, you know, but is Greg Ward in the starting lineup right now? Is Fulgham, Whiteside on their way out? You know, how deep do you think they're going to go here? I really would like to see some more support. I was hoping they'd get Elijah Moore in that second round, you know, but they were too late with that. But, you know, I was hoping they'd double up. But I really want to see where your thoughts are and where we're going to land game day.
No, it's a great question, Mike. And that's clearly one of the hottest topics. What we're waiting for today isn't Matt Pryor getting traded to the Indianapolis Colts. It's who's going to make that wide receiver room. So Quez Watkins, Jalen Rager, and Devontae Smith. Those are your three locks. There is a battle between there's a lot. I like to look around the projected 53-man rosters, even though, as you alluded to, Mike, nobody really knows. But I find it fascinating to dive into what some of the people are saying who cover the team every single day. I see a lot that have Fulgham and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside both making it as well, with John Hightower being left off Quez Watkins. Because if you remember, that draft, it was all based on, let's just acquire a bunch of speed and see what we can do with this speed. Mm-hmm. And it seems that Quez Watkins has beat out John Hightower in that department of just a super fast guy, and let's see how we can operate that into our offense.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Fulgham shows some flashes, but like he kind of disappears. And I get worried about keeping somebody like that on the roster when they're on the bubble.
Yeah, see, with Fulgham, I feel that, so he clearly has the skill set to do something. I don't know how long he can do it. I don't know if it's, you know, something you can heavily rely on. But I wonder, with that four-game sample size, what if you only need him for, let's say, three football games next year and he doesn't play a lot, but he plays three games? The fact that he has the ability to do that, is that something that you hold your hat on to keep him on this roster? Because if you're desperate and you need a wide receiver, a Travis Fulgham is better than some random. Like, who was the dude that just got cut and Doug Peterson threw up a lob to him on 4th and inches? He played at ASU. He's slipping my mind. He just got cut the other day. He had one play in the end zone. I'll take my shot on a Travis Fulgham over him instead, kind of thing. That theory. Maybe they use that. I don't know.
You think Greg Ward might be a lock at this point?
Yeah, see, that's an interesting one as well. He's reliable in terms of just a slot guy who can catch the ball, give you some yards, and he's going to make the simple catch, and sometimes you just need a basic play. I honestly don't know where these guys fall, and that's why I'm really excited to see where we are when we come down to the wire at 4 p.m. I mean, clearly he's shown over the last handful of years that he could be a piece that if Jalen Hurts needs to look underneath and you throw him the rock, he can make the catch and give you that 5-6 yards, and he can help move the chains, put you at a better advantage in second and third downs. So I would think that the last couple of years maybe gives him some sort of life, but I don't know how much life.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there. I'm trying to. My guess is Arcega-Whiteside and Hightower are the ones that don't make it. But I'd hate to see Hightower go being so young. So and Whiteside, like, he's had a lot of opportunities.
Well, last year, you're right. My gut tells me J-Jaw's getting a chance. Last year they kept 7 wide receivers. If you go right. Rager, Smith, Fulgham, Whiteside, Hightower, you're playing in that same category if you keep Greg Ward. So there is a possibility that does end up happening. Mike, thank you so much. Do you have FanFest tickets?
No, I don't.
Okay, you do now. Boom, that easy. 610-632-0975. We want to hear from you. How do you feel today with the Philadelphia Eagles? What's a position that you're really looking at when dissecting the moves that are being made? Do you feel Greg Ward deserves a chance? J.J. Arcega-Whiteside? Travis Fulgham? You know, with Greg Ward, with all due respect to what he's done over the last handful of years, I'm big on relating it to other teams in the city. And with Ronald Torreyes, Freddie Galvis, with these type of players that you're seeing the Phillies play with, Jankowski, if you're utilizing Greg Ward in a role that these players are playing with the Phillies, you don't have enough, right? You're playing Torres every day. You're playing Jankowski every day. If you're playing Greg Ward every day, like you've seen over the last handful of years, you're not good enough. That's not something that you can actually utilize if you're trying to compete. I give him a lot of golf claps, if you will. I'll give him some praise for the effort that he's done and what he did with his opportunity. A lot of players fail, and he did not necessarily fail. But if you're looking at a real product of real winning football, Greg Ward is not your slot receiver, with all due respect.
Right, but he's got to be on the roster because he's your second most experienced player at that position.
Good
only
point.
One game behind J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, who,
wow.
Can you even
whoa,
call him?
Whoa, 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 whoa. That is just mind-numbing statistics.
That is your most tenured player as an Eagles wide receiver as far as games played, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, followed by Greg Ward. So you have to keep Ward because he's the only guy who's produced with, not significant, but some time in the league. So he's got to be on the roster. So that gives me, right now I've got four guys down that I'm sure are going to be here. Greg Ward, Quez Watkins, Devontae Smith, Jalen Reagor. The rest are kind of a toss-up.
Yeah. Now, thinking of Greg Ward in general, because when Mike was asking me the call, or during the call, asking me the question about it, it's just like, what role is he going to have? Because, he'll make the roster, but what role is he going to have compared to last season? I hope very limited. I hope Jalen Reagor can play in that slot if need be, and because you're going to see versatility. I truly believe that Nick Sirianni is not just going to have Jalen Reagor line up in the slot every single possession. He's just groomed and molded into a slot guy. You can kind of utilize him in a lot of different ways and have some versatility in there, I would imagine, because that's one thing that the coach stresses, is I want these players to be active in many different areas on the field. I want to be able to run different formations and use them in different unique ways. So with Jalen Reagor, if he can take over that Greg Ward spot, though, when the slot is going to be something that Jalen Hurts is targeting down early through his progressions, let's say in a certain play call. You know, the fact that Jalen Reagor can utilize his speed a lot more than Greg Ward, that's interesting to me. 610-632-0975. Is the conversation. The most recent news for the Phillies, or excuse me, for the Eagles, they traded Matt Pryor in a 7th rounder to Indiana for a 6th round pick. How about that? Howie moving around. It's funny, every time there's a possible trade, maybe the Colts want him. Are the Eagles going to trade Andre Dillard? Maybe the Colts want him. Everything's the Colts at this point because of Frank Reich and the Carson Wentz relationship. Everything is always dedicated right to the Colts.
Yeah, they're the AFC Eagles right now, so... Hey, if you can take a 6th-round pick from them for just a 7th-rounder and a guy you were going to release, you do that every single time. So we'll keep picking their pockets as long as they'll let Howie do it. I'm perfectly fine with this move. That's a great pickup for nothing for the Eagles. This is the type of thing that Howie Roseman does do well that he deserves credit for.
How about that? See, I feel I'm the only one that gives him respected dues around here. I'm not a Howie hater. I'm not a lover, though. That's the thing. People, if I don't hate him, it's automatically you love him. I don't love him. If the Eagles went in another direction, all great things come to an end. We're hitting that territory of, because I talk about it, 20 years of solid football for the most part. Majority of the time, we've had seasons where we had some really good rosters and some really good play. Eventually, just like Tom Brady and just like Bill Belichick, that's going to fold, it'll collapse, and you need something new to spice things up. I'm fully aware that that's where the Eagles really are with this Howie Roseman era. It's starting, you're on that line, and it can go one of two ways. He can hit a resurgence and have a few more years, or... it's time. And I'm so willing to try something new. I'm so willing to have a new attitude, a fresh perspective, a new life with a general manager. I'm okay with that for sure. At the same time, I don't love him. I'm not married to Howie Roseman here forever. He's just not as bad. Nowhere even close. Let me be clear. Nowhere even close to as bad as what this fan base really feels about Howie Roseman. He's just not.
I don't think I can agree with you there, man.
So hold on. This is where we go back to last show yesterday. Okay. We ended on I view the Philadelphia sports. My fandom comes from more of a national perspective of my sports fandom. When you look around the NFL, how many GMs are there really that you would take over Howie Roseman. There are some that you would take. My point is Howie Roseman is very high on that list when the executives around football are specifically the ones voting as well. He's always in the top, always. It's just because of some move, and it hasn't been good as of late. That's why, I'm clearly aware that the 2017 draft was abysmal. There were a lot of abysmal picks with the Andre Dillard and all. But how much of that is Jeffrey Lurie, who's forcing J.J. Arcega-Whiteside on everybody else? How much of that is the owner in play having the fingerprints more so than it is Howie putting his foot down saying, no, I want him? Because Lurie has the final say, and there's a reason why Howie Roseman is there, because he is a yes man to Lurie. He's playing that game like a lot of general managers do. He's nowhere as bad as what people believe. At the same time, I'm willing for change and willing for something new, because all good things come to an end, and we're hitting that territory now with Howie Roseman. That's how I feel on him.
Fair enough. I think you're still giving him a little too much credit, in my opinion, but you're right. He is up there when the GMs take the stock of who the great general managers are in the league. Voted by his peers, he's always higher up there. It almost feels like the end of the Andy Reid tenure, where you're like, you can look at this guy and you could talk yourself into him as a GM, or Andy Reid, it was as a coach, but the course he's run in Philadelphia is about at its end. The relationship he has with some of the players and some of the people around led to the stories coming out about him over this past offseason and the season prior to, where there are all these reports about the tumultuous culture they had, and a lot of it centered around Howie. So it feels like, you're right, he's not a terrible GM. But for the reports coming out and how his relationship currently stands with the Eagles, it kind of felt like after last season he'd run that course with the team. The only thing keeping him here is the fact that Jeffrey Lurie is so tight with him and basically guarantees him his job year in and year out.
What would be fascinating is if they were to let him go and then they brought... Now, I know Jeffrey Lurie would really, really, really do the research on what's next. And who knows? Maybe they already have that style. Because we know Howie Roseman's journey of getting here. Maybe they have someone already in the works, a Howie Roseman 2.0 style of individual that's playing back page type of, role, where maybe eventually it's... But Howie Roseman's so young, and I wouldn't anticipate Howie Roseman just giving all of his knowledge to someone that he knew was eventually going to take his job. So that's actually silly that I have that thought. But yeah, anyway, it would be fascinating to think about if they were to get a new GM and you saw the moves made, how it would compare to Howie Roseman. Then you would have something to compare it to, and maybe it would put a fresh perspective on what you actually had. Basically, the grass isn't always greener on the other side. Theory. Now you're, okay, hold on a second. Howie Roseman is able to maneuver this cap, push back this contract, do this, do that. Everyone complains about that, but it's good business. It's how the NFL works. It's how good GMs operate. That's how they make their salary cap. I remember, this was years ago, I heard people complaining in New York about how Gettleman was a disaster and he didn't know what he was doing, and they specifically referenced Howie Roseman. Look what Philadelphia is doing. Look how they operate every offseason. Look how they move contracts. Look how they create money. And I started laughing in my head because that's what everybody complains about here, yet all the other cities who don't have success are looking at the Eagles as, I want to be that. That's the perspective, as I was talking about yesterday, that I like to look around the league as a whole and then apply that to how I feel about some of our teams and some of our organizations, instead of just living here in a box and nothing else matters. No, it does matter, because you need to compare how you are to the rest of every other organization. That tells you the context of how successful you are or you're not. So 610-632-0975. The Philadelphia Eagles, what are you looking forward to with the rest of the day with some of these cuts, the wide receivers? How do you feel about John Hightower, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, Travis Fulgham? We're also taking calls on the Philadelphia Phillies. Don't let that slip away. Three games back of the wild card, 3.5 games back of the division. We want to hear your thoughts on it all. We're giving away FanFest tickets at 610-632-0975. It all continues on the other side. I'm Hunter Brody, filling in for the Cuz here on the Anthony Gargano Show.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic. This is the Anthony Gargano Show. I'm Hunter Brody, filling in for the Cuz. Connor Thomas, filling in for the Chunis all week long. The 11 a.m. hour is brought to you by Golden Nugget Jewelers, where Philly gets engaged. I also have to tell you about FanFest, by the way. It's going to be incredible. It's Saturday, September 18th at Xfinity Live. It's a free event, but you will need a ticket to attend. It's presented by FanDuel Sportsbook and Live Casino and Hotel Philadelphia, the official hotel partner and after party of 97.5 The Fanatics Fan Fest 2021. Fan Fest after party will be at Live Casino and Hotel Philadelphia. There'll be live entertainment, food and drink specials at Sports and Social. Sports and Social has a 52-foot LED display, 24 TVs, a FanDuel Sportsbook and lounge, and more. Plus, you can enter to win one of 25 Samsung 75-inch HD TVs. Sign up now for live rewards and get your choice of free play, food credits, or merch. Play all night and stay the night at Live Hotel. Over 200 luxury rooms with five-star accommodations. Charlie Manuel will be a special VIP guest this year, courtesy of our friends at Landis Block. And there's actually a few more special guests that we are going to be announcing soon. DJ Mo Green will be performing. Hooters Bikini Beach will be back. A dunk tank and so much more. Must be 21 to enter FanFest. We're giving away FanFest tickets all show long. So if you do not have yours yet, 610-632-0975. Add to the conversation. I'll put you on hold, and you're going to FanFest. It's that simple. We're talking. Yeah, go ahead.
Real quick, I got to give a tip to the people because there's some whispers about who some other big guests are going to be. Now, I can't tell you, obviously. I don't have that power, but you're going to want to get your tickets quick because when these names are announced, there's going to be a lot of people looking for these FanFest tickets, so you want to get in. These are going to be some guests you're going to want to meet and hang out with. So before those names are announced, get in before the rush comes.
Absolutely.
Just a friendly tip.
Yeah. Can I get tickets too?
Of course, man. Yeah. I got you.
610-632-0975. Let's go to Michael in Baltimore. Michael, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
What's up, guys? Brody, Thomas, how you doing this morning?
What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Getting some work done, but I wanted to call in, get a little break in my... Talk about this roster. What do you guys think for the receivers?
Yeah, so...
I mean, how many are we keeping? Five?
No, I would imagine more than five receivers. The way I see it shaping up right now, and to be honest with you, this is difficult. This is the most difficult one of them all.
Most difficult.
Yeah, for sure.
And I feel kind of optimistic about that, right? You feel good about that.
Yes and no. As we alluded to a little bit earlier, this is what we were hit with. Your most experienced wide receiver on your roster is J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, and your second most is Greg Ward. So I see it going Devontae Smith, Jalen Reagor, Quez Watkins, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, Greg Ward, and Travis Fulgham. That's what I think it's going to be.
Okay, because in my mind, like, Ward has established himself as, like, he has to make the team. So in my mind, I was going around there too, but we like we love the speed that Watkins has. We like the potential that Fulgham has. So it was one of those things. I'm looking at the roster like, I really don't know. Like, and I like Hightower too, but I just don't see him making the cut.
Yeah, I don't think John Hightower is going to make it. Greg Ward's going to be your steady guy. I just hope his role is significantly less than what we've seen in the past. I like what he's done, and he did play good for the opportunity he was given, and he deserves a spot. I just don't want to see him a lot because good teams just don't have Greg Ward out there. And one of the things that we're looking forward to this season is growth, is the young players getting better. Reagor and Watkins and Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith. I want to see those players as much as possible when we're talking about these snaps.
On that same wavelength, I'm going to see Dallas really establish. I think that Dallas Goedert could be one of the premier tight ends in the league.
And, you know, he just earned that starting spot. He's going to be the, you know, tight end one. Even though we play with two tight ends, he's going to be tight end number one. And I see him and Hurts having a really good connection.
You know what? That's a great point just in general of Dallas Goedert. We all just anticipate him stepping. And I'm not saying you're wrong for thinking he's a special tight end in this league. I don't know if he'll ever reach the Travis Kelce's of the world or even Zach Ertz in his prime. I don't know if he'll reach that level. But that's one thing that we just consistently write in. Oh, we have Dallas Goedert. Have we really seen him in that role yet where he's been the tight end for you?
We haven't yet.
Are we putting fair expectations on him? He'll be good. I believe he'll be good. But as you alluded to, Michael, you mentioned he'll be a top-end premier tight end. I don't know if he will or not. I'm not saying he can't. We just don't know.
We don't know, but you know how it goes with young quarterbacks. He's going to be looked at often. I feel like him and Sanders are going to be the ones that take a lot of the receptions early on as Hurts is still trying to – even though he's QB1, he has very little experience. So I feel like a lot of those, you know, dink and dunk passes to Sanders out the backfield or to Dallas Goedert is going to be big.
Yeah, if Sanders can catch it. But go ahead.
True. I want to ask you guys what you think about Cam Newton being released by New England. You saw that, right?
Yes. My opinion on it is I'm not surprised based off of what they saw last year. If we're talking on-field production, am I surprised that they're not rocking with Cam Newton? No, I'm not surprised because it hasn't been extremely beneficial for their team. Am I surprised that he's not maybe in a backup role or something? Just the fact that they straight up cut him and now Brian Hoyer is your backup? Something tells me that this is more than just on-field production, and maybe it's locker room, maybe as we alluded to with COVID stuff. Is he vaccinated? Is he not? You know, things of that nature. What more behind-the-scenes stuff than just football-related, because he's probably a better backup than Brian Hoyer is.
You know what? Honestly, I feel like Cam has that ego, and he was probably like, if you're going to make me a backup, just cut me. Because, you know, I think he doesn't want to be a backup. And that I feel like that puts him in a place where he's just done with football now. Because I don't see any other team that's like, oh, let's go get Cam right now, a week before the season starts, and make him QB1. I just don't see that.
Right, to make him QB1, you're right. Could he be a backup to Dak Prescott in case Dak Prescott gets injured? I wouldn't rule that out of the equation. Mike, I know you're from Baltimore, but is it possible Fan Fest is in play or no?
You know what? I can make my way up there. I've had some time up in the city, you know, not recently, but
why don't we make that happen? Saturday, September 18th. Thank you so much, Michael, for calling in. I'll put you on hold. We'll get your information. Let's go to Ron in media. Ron, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm great. Good morning, guys. Listen, I need somebody to start screaming and hollering so we can take Cousins on. You guys are doing an excellent job.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Can you guys, later on after I get off the call, go in a little bit to the offensive line? Because my problem, like the last three seasons, we always say, not myself, but most people say, oh, we've got one of the best offensive lines in the league. And then, you know, three of them are out part of the season or most of the season, and we have problems with our backups coming in. We don't have competent backups. So I know they've done a little bit with the offensive line, but I really don't think they've done enough to make a difference and really make us a strong team. Really,
what?
The offensive line really has to be addressed.
Yeah. Well, I did see yesterday, and it's funny that this happened just because of timing, not actually funny because it happened. There was some swelling with Lane Johnson's ankle, and one of the discussions that Connor and I had yesterday on the air was, is that right side going to be able to hold up? And I claimed when you think of the 18 holes in golf, they're probably on hole 14, 13, 14 or so. They're not on hole 18 yet, but hearing about the swelling, it kind of dives right into what you're saying here of this offensive line. You know, it's not good that this early they're swelling. Now, it makes sense because you did have some, I think he got it all scraped out and squared away there. But ultimately, like, it's not good to hear that the ankle is already swelling and the season hasn't begun yet, even though it does make sense at the same time.
So I think they went and got like one guy that was a competent backup. And I don't think they actually went after a really good dominant starter. I mean, it's just ridiculous how we haven't address that issue.
Well, they did grab Landon Dickerson. That's supposed to be a future piece for them forever. I don't know if their line is that. If you, and once again, this kind of relates to how you approach it to the rest of the league. The Eagles have one of the best offensive lines in the entire league. I don't know what else you would have done to really bolster this thing up even more than what they already have right now, entering the season with one of the tougher offensive lines.
It's like we really just don't have those dominant, nasty players that the good teams and good organizations go after and have. We, you know, with Reed, with Andy Reed, he was good. He's always created a great offensive line, and we just don't have that. I just don't see it.
Yeah,
the last three years.
I disagree with you a little bit. I mean, I think this offensive line is one of the tougher ones, and all. I just don't know how much more you can get than Jason Kelsey, Lane Johnson, Brandon Brooks, and then Opeta. If anyone on the line is just a player, and I know with Maialata right now, he's up and coming, so he's thrown into this, but not because we can see the skill set translate into something that maybe could be there long term. The only player on this offensive line that is just average, just a guard, is Isaac Seumalo. So other than him, you know, they seem pretty stacked on that offensive line. I disagree with you a little bit.
They are, I'm not saying they're not talented, but they don't stand up.
Yeah.
And this is a 17-game season. And we, you know what I mean? And I don't think they're going to stand up.
That's fair. So if you want to bring up just the fact that you personally can't rely on their health at this point because they're getting up there in age, I'm fine with that. I just don't know. So, I mean, you're not going to move on from Lane Johnson. You're not going to move on from some of these players. So what do you do other than, you know, you're not going to have an extra Lane Johnson hanging around your bench. It's just a difficult position to be in. I think your best option is to rock with this and just hope that they can stay upright because they are on hole 14 instead of 18. You can't just have a whole bench. And I'm not saying you're saying this, but just throwing it out there. You can't have a full bench of Lane Johnsons just waiting for the Lane Johnson to go down and you can just, put in the next Lane Johnson hanging out.
Oh yeah, you're absolutely right. I just think they just need to be more aggressive in the draft for talent in the offensive line.
I think you're starting to see that though. Landon Dickerson was that first move. Ron, do you have tickets to FanFest?
No, and I would love to have them. I had a ball at the last FanFest.
Well, you're going
to
have even a bigger ball at this one. You're on hold. We'll get your information. 610-632-0975. Make sure you get your FanFest tickets. And, of course, join in on the convo. I'm supposed to be throwing these guys. I have a whole list of names right here that not only the list that Connor beautifully executed and printed out for me, but then I translated the ones that I wanted to ask the callers on my notes in front of me. And I'm just so excited about these conversations, it slips my mind by the end. I want to give him FanFest tickets. I'm all excited. He gets me juiced up into the conversation. And I forget.
No, it's fine.
It's not fine.
We got stuff out of him, though. So let's do this. We'll take it from Ron, and we'll say the five starting linemen, we're going to put them down as part of our 53-man roster. So Lane Johnson.
That must be the backup he's waiting for to slide in. Lane Johnson.
In a couple years, they'll draft him. Brandon Brooks, Jason Kelsey, Isaac Seumalo, and Jordan Mailata all make the team. Pretty safe assumption there?
Yeah, I'd say so.
So with those five and Dallas Goedert from our previous caller who brought up the tight ends, we now have 18 guys on our roster currently. So we got a couple spots still to fill out.
I want to touch on that Dallas Goedert thing, though.
Okay.
Isn't it crazy that we just assume, though? Like, the problem is you still have Zach Ertz here. So the 12 personnel set, that opens up a lot. There's a big difference if, let's say, Richard Rodgers and Dallas Goedert are your two tight ends out there. Or you have three wide receivers and you have a tight end out there and Dallas Goedert is the one with Zach Ertz, let's say, traded to another city. Are we just randomly assuming that Dallas Goedert can take on this huge role? Now, I think he's good, and I think he's actually above average. I feel, though, that he's placed in this category of, as Michael, a previous caller two callers ago, said, premier tight end in the league. I don't see him being that, but I can see him being reliable. I can see him being very athletic and making plays for you. I just sense that he's thrown in this category already. It kind of reminds me of, and it's funny, I have to talk to John Kincaid about this because I think he's got a very strong take. He's got many on Carter Hart. He's just like, why are we putting Carter Hart in this category already? And I want to push back on him when I get the chance on that. I feel that same way, though, with Dallas Goedert. Why are we automatically just assuming? We've never really seen it. And in our brains, oh, when Zach Ertz is gone, it'll just be fine. It might be okay, but it's going to be a drop off to Zach Ertz's prime, in my opinion. And I don't know if people recognize that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that goes back to something you talked about with the tackle position. Now, the Eagles have always had it, so we take it for granted. You think about the Eagles' tight end history. So before Dallas Goedert, of course, you have the Zach Ertz era that's still ongoing, where he's one of the great tight ends in football. Before Zach Ertz, you have a little bit of Brent Celek in there. Before Brent Celek and a little overlap, you're looking at L.J. Smith. Before that, you're looking at a Chad Lewis. We had a great string of tight ends playing for the Birds. So it's kind of like you just always assume they're going to have that higher part of the league tight end. He had a good rookie season, Dallas Goedert, that is, but we haven't seen his true form because he's been covered up by what was Carson Wentz's security blanket in Zach Ertz. So I lean more to your side. I don't know that we're giving the proper amount of credit to Dallas Goedert. We may be giving too much based on him being a higher draft pick and always assuming the Eagles are going to have a good tight end.
It doesn't mean he's not going to be good. I think he's actually above average. I really do. I think he can and do a lot of damage out there for sure. It's also a lot different when you're tight end one compared to tight end two and you're playing with Zach Ertz. It's a lot different. Now, we talk about Zach Ertz and the speed that they had limitedly because DeSean Jackson goes down right off the jump. But yeah, it's a different beast out there when you're the focus as the tight end position. And we'll also date that back to the Lane Johnson thing. So there's some swelling in his ankle. You brought that up specifically yesterday, Connor, that you don't know how comfortable you feel with this line based off of where they are with age. Totally understandable. I stressed even the year before Brandon Brooks got hurt a second time. I was afraid because we're just, once again, assuming that Brandon Brooks would be okay. He ended up being all right, but then another injury happened. You're starting to hit that back stretch. That swelling already occurring without playing any football. Just imagine 4 weeks in, 5 weeks in. If there's any player that's going to battle through it, it's Lane Johnson. But we know there's a breaking point. We've just seen that breaking point. Is this somewhat a defining, something we should look at as a definer looking ahead? Now, no one wants to do that. But I'm just saying, if we go to week five, possibly we look back at August 31st and discuss how we mentioned this could be a major concern. And it's just something that's already occurring right now with Lane Johnson.
Right. And it's an issue. Who are you going to start there if something happens to Lane Johnson? Like Andre Dillard.
Jack Driscoll.
Exactly. That's who it's going to be. And do you have faith in Jack Driscoll? Who played all right last year, but it's going to be a totally different team if your bookend tackles are Jordan Mailata and Jack Driscoll, as opposed to having Lane Johnson over there. It's a worry. Hopefully it doesn't pop up. And like you said, he's one tough SOB. Like he played through the collapsing of his ankle last year. So hopefully he fights through the swelling, but it's another area of concern we'll have to look at.
See, the problem is with Jack Driscoll, I like him as an individual player and as an individual talent. And now he has some games under his belt at the NFL level, which experience-wise is definitely different from the growth aspect of these players getting more time, let's say, this season. If you have Brooks next to him and it's steady every week, instead of flipping around who's playing next to you, the communication, this guy's out of the lineup, this guy's in the lineup because of injuries. If Jack Driscoll was to play for a little bit of time next to Brandon Brooks with Jason Kelce, with Isaac Seumalo and Jordan Mailata, I don't know if that'll be horrendous. I really don't. I think he'll be able to hold his own on the right side. If you're playing comparison, not even close to what Lane Johnson would be. But if it's one player going down and one player getting slotted while staying together as a core week to week, instead of here's Nate Herbig, here's this guy, here's Jack Driscoll, here's Opetta, here's Brown, here's enter the next guy getting thrown into the fire. That's why it looks so dysfunctional and so confusing last season.
Completely agree with you there. Completely. So if we're looking at our offensive lineman spot, is it safe to say we can add an Andre Dillard and a Jack Driscoll to the active roster?
Yes.
Both going to make the 53-man?
Yes.
So now we have seven offensive linemen currently on the team. So roster's taking a little bit more shape here.
Do you think, see, it comes down to Opetta, Toth. Do you think those two make the roster?
It's tough. See, the right side of this line is so questionable because of the injury history. here's the thing. So another guy that's definitely going to be on the roster, Landon Dickerson's definitely going to
yes.
be on here. So you can pencil him in. You're already up to, they carried 8 offensive linemen at the start of the season last year. Their 53-man roster ahead of week 1 had 8. So now we're already up to 3, 6, 8 guys here. Do they just cut both of them, or do they bring in the extra offensive lineman to prepare for that breaking down of the right side of the line that we're so worried about?
I wouldn't be surprised if they did bring as many offensive linemen as possible. There was a report the other day, I think this was yesterday or the day before, that they're actively looking around for some offensive linemen, some linebackers as well. So it was discussed. So maybe they do. Maybe they... We know that's a position they value. They stressed it enough at the quarterback position. It's a quarterback factory. We're looking for quarterbacks. Well, there's also something to be said about the way that they value the offensive line as well. I want to try and find exactly, though, specifically that report about them looking for some linebacker help. I think that's an area of... You know what's good, though? No Nate Gary. He was a disaster.
Thank goodness. And he goes to San Francisco, and he's, like, immediately released by them. I can... I'm looking so much forward to not having to watch Whitesnake play football this year.
I'm excited for Dickerson, though. I truly believe he could play. And now, the injuries, they're legitimate injury concerns. They're serious knee problems. It's no joke. But I believe the talent involved, if he's available and healthy for your team, he could dominate an offensive line. Well, he'll dominate the defensive front on the other team. On the offensive line, he can be dominant. And one of those players, we talk about Lane Johnson. We talk about Jason Kelce. The way that they are with this organization from a leadership standpoint and from on the field perspective, I truly believe that Landon Dickerson is in the making of one of those type of players. And you clearly understand how important that is to not only the team aspect and keeping everyone together, but also the physical play. 610-632-0975. We head into the 12 o'clock hour. Keeping our eye on the Eagles' cuts throughout the day. And you can chime in at 610-632-0975 to get your FanFest tickets and to talk some birds with us. The Phillies won 7-4. I guess that tells us everything we need to know about the Phils and if you're sucked in or not. No one wants to talk Phils. 3.5 games back of the division, 3 games back of the wild card. Is it all right to be sucked in a joking manner? Because that's the way I am. 610-632-0975. It continues on the other side. I'm Hunter Brody, filling in for the Cuz on the Anthony Gargano Show.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back to 97.5 The Fanatic. I'm Hunter Brody, filling in for the Cuz here on the Anthony Gargano Show. 610-632-0975. We're keeping an eye out on some Eagles cuts throughout the day, some NFL cuts as well. Cam Newton was chopped by the New England Patriots. It happened about an hour and a half ago or so. We'll get to the phone lines in just 1 minute. 610-632-0975. I got to throw this your way, though, Connor. Did you see this story about this fake football team that made their way on ESPN?
Yeah, I caught a glimpse of that.
What is going on? I don't know. Like, the problem is there's so many different angles to this story that's blowing my mind. Okay? Apparently there is a school called Bishop Sycamore. Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah.
It's not even real. It's not even real. They're just players who made up fake profiles online for these football teams, and they pretend they have all these prospects and they pretend they have all these D1 offers. The coach has a warrant out for his arrest, and they keep getting these football games displayed on ESPN.
It's crazy. And they're playing multiple games in like a weekend. They play like a Friday night game and then a Saturday game. They're playing against some of the best teams in the country in high school football, but they've got JUCO kids that have played like junior college playing for them. This whole story is wild.
I'm lost for words. There's so many angles here. What makes you feel that way? It appears from reports the network's own commentary team was to field a number of Division I players. This is talking about how ESPN, they had not made an official statement yet. Okay. It's just absolutely insane, though. So basically, it's a made-up school with a lot of JUCO kids that pretend they have all these high school football accolades. They don't, and they're playing games on ESPN.
Yeah, this is like, do you remember that old movie with Justin Long, Accepted, where he makes the fake college and he goes away? There's an old one where he like creates this fake college and gets in a bunch of trouble for it. And it's kind of like if that team had a fake college team and they went and they played Alabama in the national championship. You wouldn't even script that because it's too crazy. And yet it's happening right now.
My thing is, what makes you feel the need to do that? So there was an individual who was driven internally to come up with this secretive plan to play all these football games and then actually executed it, which I guess I have to tip my cap and respect the fact that they got it done multiple times. But how do you honestly analyze what's ahead of you? And that's what you, like, what are we going to do today? Well, I'll have my cup of coffee and I'll come up with this shady high school football team.
More than that, what's the end game here? Like, what are you looking to accomplish? Because some of these guys...
Maybe he becomes a coach in college?
Right? Is he just creating, he's trying to create his own fake resume? And like, but the sad part is you're putting these kids at risk. Like part of the story that some of it's entertaining and like, wow, this is crazy and wild. Some of it's just sad. Like he's making these guys play multiple games in a weekend. They're tired. They got their show run by one of the better teams in high school football over the weekend. It's just, you got to put the kids in a safer position and what they're doing, it just isn't safe.
Yeah, this falls into the category of Monte Teo, fake girlfriend. I mean, this falls in the category of what? This story is nuts. If you haven't seen it, you should definitely check it out. 610-632-0975. All right, let's go to the phone. Just go to Rob in the Southwest. Rob, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Rob.
How you doing, bro?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Man, first time calling, long time listener. I'm doing good.
Thank
you. Currently at work right now.
Okay. What do you got for us today? What are you thinking on the birds?
Man, me and my cousin was talking the other day. And we were talking about the Minshew situation. And we were talking it like we think that the Eagles don't have a lot of confidence in Carson Wentz if they made that move.
Yeah, so because what? You're saying because of Carson Wentz, the way they didn't feel confident?
I'm sorry, not Carson Wentz. Jalen Hurts. They don't have a lot of faith in Jalen Hurts.
Right. So are you saying that you basically see this as a Carson Wentz 2.0 scenario where they're planning the out of Jalen Hurts with Gardner Minshew?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know for sure yet, but it's looking that way so far.
See, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. The way I see this, and we brought this up yesterday, I'm not trying to be naive here because Howie Roseman was labeled the most untrustworthy general manager in all of the National Football League, so that has to be factored into the equation. So maybe I'm being naive, but the way I honestly see it is Jalen Hurts has 17 games to prove himself. They have a bunch of draft picks next year if he's not the guy, and Gardner Minshew's just a cheap backup option that's less than $1 million per year, and they're kind of looking at it as, okay, we gave up a sixth-round, day-three pick for someone who can be in our quarterback room for the next 2 years getting paid barely any money with a decent upside if anything was to go wrong. That's the way they look at it more so than we don't believe in Jalen Hurts so much that Gardner Minshew, of all people, will be the player that we move forward with.
Makes a lot more sense. Makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, I mean, let me ask you this, Rob. How do you feel about Jalen Hurts? Do you question if he could be your quarterback of the future?
Listen, I like the kid a lot. I think he has a lot of potential. I think we just need to give him some time.
Yeah, I agree. The problem I have here, and I constantly go back and forth with myself, Rob, is if you're an organization, if you're a GM, and you see 17 plus 4 games, that's 21 games of a quarterback, is that enough time to truly know what he's capable of doing? When you analyze how professional athletes work, it takes years to learn how to play at the next level, especially the National Football League. So is that even enough time to give him a fair opportunity to assert himself at this level?
Nah, not at all.
Yeah, that's the scary part about it, Rob.
I feel like we were going, dealing with this again about two, three years ago with Ben Simmons. We were asking ourselves the same thing: like, do we like press the issue, or do we give him some time? And now look where we're at.
You're right. We gave him time, and I guess, and the difference is with Jalen Hurts, I can't imagine, based off of how these two are made up mentally, that Jalen Hurts is going to go down the same road of Ben Simmons, where I'm not going to add to my game. He doesn't have a mental block with his game, at least one that we don't know, and it's definitely not as glaring as not shooting a jump shot. So you're right.
I totally agree.
Yeah, the way that you're displaying it is, as long as you see some sort of steps from Jalen Hurts, enough of a percentage that will keep you more optimistic that there's more to grow, then you'd hold on to him as long as you see steps in the right direction at a significant pace enough to keep you satisfied.
Yeah, totally agree.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Rob. Do you have FanFest tickets?
No, sir, but I would love to go.
All right, you're going. Tickets right now. You're on hold. 610-632-0975. We'll get your information. Let's go to Stu and Maniunk. Stu, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey, how's it going, boys?
How's it going, Stu?
Hey, that story at ESPN is pretty crazy. I bet you there's a couple 25-year-olds in Jet Pro lot that are pissed that they missed the opportunity to play on ESPN.
You're probably right about that, for sure.
About the Eagles, I'm kind of skeptical about this secondary. I just kind of wanted to hear your thoughts on it. I mean, they bring in two guys on one-year deals that, I mean, doesn't seem like either of their past teams wanted to keep them, and Nelson and Harris, and then you got McLeod coming off a ACL tear, and he's already kind of old. And just looking at some of these teams they got are pretty big passing offenses, like the Chiefs, the Falcons, Bucks, Chargers, and Cowboys, so and I wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
I'm okay with a one-year deal, only because the alternative is a bad contract and a one-year deal, regardless of how well he plays or how poorly he plays. It's not really going to limit you as you analyze what this organization needs to do. More big picture. Healthy, I like the defense. A lot of the concerns is the defense right now, and I'm a little baffled by that. I guess the only where I'm most concerned with the defense is depth, not so much starting. Now, we know that this team gets injured a lot. We've seen a lot of injuries, so the depth is going to show its ugly head if I was a betting man and I had to put money down on it. But I actually like Anthony Harris, Eric Wilson. I like the addition of Steven Nelson opposite of Darius Slay. It just comes down to what happens if one outside corner goes down. Now you're throwing Avante Maddox out there. McPherson is a name where I like the potential. I feel we were probably going to see some times where he gets toasted and burnt out there at the same time. So that's where I am. I'm okay with the one-year deals. It's better than the alternative. I'm more worried about the depth.
I guess I'm the same way with the depth, just because we're always dealing with the injuries every year, it seems like. And I just don't see. I mean, maybe they'll stay healthy this year, but I can't. At least we don't have double move Mills out there anymore, but Maddox outside is kind of a liability.
Oh, it's a disaster. And bringing up the double move, Jalen Mills does bite on that. Every time I think of Jalen Mills, though, I naturally think about Jim Schwartz. And one aspect of this defense that we've been screaming about was the lack of turnovers by your cornerbacks, not being able to go up and grab the football, get an interception. Are we going to witness something so different and so unique than what Jim Schwartz has thrown out there? The answer to that is yes. So how is that going to impact this defense in general with Jonathan Gannon, where maybe we're pleasantly surprised by the cornerback play and the fact that they're not going to be left on an island as much as you saw with Jim Schwartz, where maybe it's not as much of an issue as we believe before we see any action?
You know, that's a good point. I didn't even think of the Jim Schwartz aspect of it. Maybe that'll play in the Slay's hand more now that he has some playmaking and he's not just out there by himself. Maybe a couple blitzes here and there, too.
For sure. Instead of just living on the front four all the time, even though Jim did have a successful scheme, it did work. It got tiring. And just like with Howie Roseman, at times maybe it'll be something new with Jim Schwartz. I thought he was a very good defensive coordinator. It's time for something new and something fresh at some point. Stu, you looking for some FanFest tickets?
Oh, yeah, man.
I got you. We'll get your information. I did it again with the 610-632.
Come on,
0975. I know. I'm in for a loop right now.
All right. I'm going to make you do three now just because you've been skipping out on the callers.
Well, I'll be honest. I got.
Give me the kicker.
Jake Elliott?
Okay, going out on a limb there.
Going with Jake. And then they got that new Aussie punter, correct?
Yeah.
He's on there as well.
Aaron Sipos.
Yes.
And give me one more. How about the long snapper?
It's going to be who it always is.
Yes. Good old Rick Lovato.
Yeah.
Only one on the roster.
Yeah.
Okay, we got three. You made up for it.
All right, cool. There was something I wanted to mention. Oh, yes. So I mentioned how the Eagles were looking for offensive linemen. I just want to clarify. The way it was worded in the report confused me a little bit. They were taking calls on offensive linemen. I thought they were taking calls as if they were looking to pick them up. They were looking to get rid of them, which makes a lot more sense why Matt Pryor was traded to the Indianapolis Colts, and possibly, I don't know what their move is with Andre Dillard. The more and more I think about it, I probably feel more comfortable keeping him than just trading him away. I don't see the value being there. That's what it basically comes down to. Not because I feel so strongly about Andre Dillard. I just don't feel strongly about the other side of things.
Right.
I don't think you're going to get anything in return to make it worth your trade.
Right, so he's a former first-round pick. You have him another year after this one on his rookie deal still. So what is the harm in holding on to him? Like, if you want to move on from him, you can do it next off this point next year. Let's say he does absolutely nothing this year. He has another down training camp. All you are going to get for him at this point is what? Like a sixth round pick. You can get that again for him next year just on his potential. Maybe even a little bit better because he'd be on the expiring contract. So that team would just be getting a 1 year loaner. But moving on from Andre Dillard now, the benefit is just not, there's nothing there. You'd be giving them away for basically nothing, and you'd be giving up potential depth.
That's it right there. The potential depth thing. If there was something to happen to Maialata, I don't feel great about Andre Dillard being slotted in there for a long period of time and for a lot of football games. I'll tell you what, though, without him here, I don't know how much, I don't know. What is your alternative if Andre Dillard's not here and Jordan Maialata goes down?
Right, exactly. You got to go find a guy off the street probably or put somebody in a position they're not used to playing. And that's how you end up with guys like, Jamon Brown last year that was fixing his gloves while Carson Wentz was getting his head taken off. So, yeah, I'd like Andre Dillard to hang out one more season.
Yeah, it's crazy because at the time, out of Washington, there was legitimacy to, because remember, they moved up, but they moved up because there were other teams targeting offensive line play. It's not as if they swung and missed on some prospect that nobody ever heard of and nobody was ever thinking of. Andre Dillard was mentioned as one of the better offensive lines in that draft. It just ended up where, I don't know, his mental makeup at this level, that's where I think he's lost the most. I'm not telling you he's got a bunch of skill involved, but it seems what you're hearing is he's so damn emotional. He's so overmatched by the body language, the demeanor. When he does well in practice, you know he does well. When he does poorly in practice, you know he does poorly, and he wears it on his sleeve in the wrong way. Sometimes that's good for players, where the energy rises out from them. Travis Konecny, to throw it towards the Flyers for comparison, he plays with that edge. He gets in your face. Kevin Hayes, they're always chirping, flying around the ice. You know, that's a part of their game that maximizes their potential and who they can be. It brings them to the next level. But you can overplay the emotion when he has a bad season, like Travis Konecny did last year, and you start getting emotional because you're upset and you're really bothered that maybe you're not putting the puck in the net as much as you would like to. That's where it can negatively affect you big time on the field, and that's, or the ice in that case. But that's what you're seeing in Andre Dillard on a consistent basis at practice. He's wearing his emotions too much on his sleeve when things go wrong.
And it's good when you're good. It's bad when you're bad, basically. It seems like a simplification. But if you're going to wear your emotions and you're not a great player or as great of a player as you were expected to be, it drags you down. And that's what I think happened to him.
Yeah, I watched Bryce Harper wear his emotions yesterday for sure with that two-run bomb. You know, there was a play against the Arizona Diamondbacks when they were already winning. It was, I forget what the score was, but they were up pretty good. They were in control of the baseball game. And he lined out and made a really good at, it was a really good at-bat. Defender made a really good play, and he got thrown out at first. He took his helmet off, ready to throw it to the ground, mouthed an F-bomb out there. And it's like, you're winning the game. You're up. You're in this streak right now of taking care of business against a team that you should. Just that fire and energy, though, that passion of he just demands greatness from himself. It was a really good hit ball. It was just a really good play by the defender out in the infield. And, you know, sometimes you just tip your cap. But just the way that he internally burns from not beating out that play at first base, that's the difference in how some of these players are wired. I love that, watching some back to the professional athletes in the way that they approach the game. It's like no other. We all played sports growing up, and we went through the ropes. Some of us played at the college level. Some of us played at the high school level. Maybe semi-pro is in the mix for a lot of listeners as well. There's something different about the way that these professional athletes prepare for the game, play the game, analyze the game, the way that they have themselves internally ready to rock and roll in certain situations. And I admire that because it's not easy to do.
No, it's especially not when you look at, and you brought up Bryce Harper, you look at the rest of your lineup and you have a Travis Jankowski, a Rafael Marchand, like these guys hitting behind you, and you look at it like, oh, well, I got to carry us again. To get up every game for that and have the type of second half that he's having, I mean, that's why he is who he is and why he's getting paid what he's getting paid right now.
Did you hear his comments after the game about showing up to the ballpark every day?
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's two. The way you said, oh, yeah, you might be referencing the one about him feeling he's the best player every time he's in the box.
Oh, okay. Was there another one?
There was. This one was more about injury and banged up and how much he's been playing as of late. He talked about going to Joe Girardi before games. It's interesting. Maybe we'll spin that around on the other side. Bryce has been playing a lot of baseball. The thing is, he's been dominating while playing a lot of baseball. I just wonder, just as we saw with Zach Wheeler, sometimes fatigue just settles in and there's not much you can do about it. Zach Wheeler threw a lot of innings this season. Well, his August has not been his sharpest. He's allowed a lot of runs scored. He's allowed some sticky situations to unfold. And unfortunately, we're not accustomed to that this year. We've seen it more as of late. So we'll dive into that on the other side, on top of keeping the Eagles conversation going at 610-632-0975. FanFest tickets are being given away all show long here. Also, in the 1 o'clock hour, we will be joined by Scott Lauber, who covers the Phillies for the Philadelphia Inquirer, to get his thoughts on what he sees from this team. Is there a real shot? The top of the lineup runs Odubel, Gene Segura, Bryce Harper, and then maybe Andrew McCutchen, maybe Didi Gregorius if he's not on paternity leave. Then you see what? Marchand, Jankowski, Freddie Galvis, Ronald Torres, all these names. It's pretty bizarre to see them win with that bottom half of the lineup from 5 through 9. 610-632-0975. You're listening to the Anthony Gargano Show. I'm Hunter Brody, filling in for the Cuss.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
You don't have the luxury of saving him from himself right now. You need him so bad with the rest of this lineup currently how it is. With JT day-to-day, with no Andrew Knapp, with no, not that Knapp's a big thing, but you're down two catchers. You're down Rhys Hoskins at first. Alec Bohm was sent down. Your opening day lineup is in shambles compared to what you're looking at right now. Bryce doesn't have the luxury to sit. And it's good that he doesn't want to. It's an awesome outlook on the game and how he plays the game and why he's so good. But they don't have that luxury.
I agree completely. I wonder how bad it is. Clearly, it's to a point where he can still be very effective and it's extremely playable. And you have an off day on Thursday, which will help out not only Bryce Harper, but can help out Zach Wheeler as well with, just in terms of maybe those innings pitched really coming up and affecting the way that he's been playing. So just something to look at. But, you know, to hear him actually say there's days where he does say to Girardi, I'm going to need this one. And then as soon as he gets to the ballpark, he changes his mind about things. It's clear that he thinks, and when he analyzes it, he does believe deep down he needs it, but he's unwilling to commit to it, knowing that he's a gamer, knowing this team desperately needs him at the same time. But, you know, I'm just looking at the the seriousness of it.
Right.
How brutal is it? It's clearly not stopping his play.
Well, his issue is he says he could take the day off, and then he walks up out of the dugout and sees Jankowski out there in right field warming up, and he's like, well, that's more brutal than how I feel, so I'm going to play through this.
Yeah, that's so true.
Like, what's your other option if he doesn't play? Yeah. He's got to be out there.
I agree.
Hopefully he makes it through without anything major happening injury-wise, but it's kind of the same thing with Wheeler fading away right now. You're tired, boss. You've been carrying us for a couple months now, but we need you because the rest of the team is not really there like we thought they were going to be at the start of the year. It's up to you guys to carry us, and so far they have.
And that's what Zach Wheeler did do. I'll give him credit. That sixth inning. It wasn't easy considering the circumstances prior, allowing 5 hits, 4 earned runs, and walked 4 batters in the first 5 innings. Yo, Wheels, we need you here to get through 6 because, well, we're a little short in that bullpen. Ian Kennedy's not available. We have to get creative. Connor Brogdon had a good 7th. The 8th got into a bit of trouble. Archie Bradley stepped in. I questioned Joe with a couple different moves, even though I don't know necessarily what the alternative would have been with Archie Bradley, with Jose Alvarado, but the moves that he made yesterday in crucial moments ended up working out. And Jose Alvarado, he gives you a queasy feeling in your stomach for sure. Gets out Juan Soto and blew by Josh Bell in some crucial moments there. You have to recognize that the numbers that were called on ended up sealing the deal.
Yeah, he pushed the right buttons yesterday. Hopefully he can continue to do so while the Braves are still playing the last tough stretch of their season, and you can make up more ground so that series with the Braves, I believe the Phillies' second to last of the year, is a 3-game set with Atlanta. Hopefully that means something. They got a chance to overtake them. So keep pushing the right buttons, please. And Bryce, please keep playing.
The problem is Matt Moore is on the bump today. How do you feel about... So 3 times this month, he's given you 4 innings, 4 1/3, 4, and 1 6-inning outing. That was the no-hit 6-inning outing with 8 strikeouts against the Cincinnati Reds, of all teams, the team that you were chasing for a wild card spot. If I asked you over, under, 4 1/3 for Matt Moore today, what would you take?
I'm taking the over just because the Nationals lineup is so bad.
Well, like, guess what? They got to Zach Wheeler yesterday.
They did. Well, Wheeler got to himself a little bit.
Fair point.
When you walk the bases loaded, like, I knew it was going to be a tough day for Zach when he got out of the first inning, right? That bases loaded jam he was in. And you look at the scoreboard and it said Washington 0 runs, 0 hits, and no errors up there for the Phillies. You're like, wow, you had the bases loaded. So you walk the bases loaded and you throw like 50-some pitches that early. That's when I knew it was going to be a rough day. I don't think that was a product of the lineup. I think that was a product of Wheeler not having his sharpest stuff. If you get through Juan Soto and you don't give anything down the middle to Josh Bell, I think you're going to be all right with this lineup. I think Matt Moore can manage that.
Wow, the confidence in Matt Moore is just building, coming from the one.
Well, 4 2/3, maybe 5 innings.
Coming from the one who's already selling the train while it's total.
I don't think they're going to go 0 for the rest of the way. I don't think they'll catch Atlanta. They have to win more games than Atlanta wins the rest of the way, and I don't think they can do that.
Let's just have some fun hypotheticals. Let's say the Dodgers sweep the Atlanta Braves, okay? And the Phillies win 2 of 3 against the Washington Nationals. Would that do anything for you?
No.
What would change your perspective on this? Anything? What if the Braves lose 5 in a row, but the Phillies win not all their games, but let's say they win 4 out of 6 games in this next 6-game stretch, but the Braves lose 5 in a row? Would that do anything for you?
I don't know that it would. Here's the thing. So I'm looking at that series with Atlanta later. That's going to be, if you're going to catch the Braves, that's going to be a pivotal series. I got to actually find the dates of that. I believe it's the last series in September before they play one in October. But you can't go into that series even with Atlanta. You look at these lineups, they are the better baseball team right now. The Braves are. Right? Is there any debate in that when you see the injuries the Phillies have and who they're starting at certain positions?
No, I'm not debating that.
So even if they fully catch the Braves, and they're sitting at dead even heading into that 3-game series, if Atlanta takes 2 of 3, then you're hosed unless you catch them in the last one. I don't see them as the better team, so even if they even it, they'd still have to beat the Braves in that series, hold it for the next one, and they haven't been that consistent this year.
It's on the road as well. And the Phillies are 28-36 on the road, which makes it a little bit more difficult. Not that the Braves are playing great at home. They're 500 at home. They actually do better on the road than they do in their own ballpark. We know, though, that Aaron Nola has struggled in that said ballpark. Now, we don't know what's going to line up for that series, but I'm just saying he's not had such a great start in that ballpark when he does have to go down to Atlanta.
Right. Well, 16-15 the rest of the way. One game over 500 will get the Phils to 83 wins. So we're looking at, man, that's not going to get it done.
No.
That's not. You're going to need them to go significantly above 500. And what it comes down to is at its base level, this baseball team is not much better than 500. They're going to have to be to catch the Braves.
You're not wrong. If you go back to the beginning of the season, and we looked at the win totals, which we've discussed before, 80.5, 81.5. You took the over, correct?
Absolutely.
You placed
hammered
that bet.
The over.
Now, at that time, I said the same exact thing. There's no way they don't get over 80 wins. There's no way they don't get over 81.5 wins. They're absolutely going to. I had them at 86 in the beginning of the season. Shame on me. We probably should have listened to the odds a little bit better, no?
Yeah.
That seemed so low. At the time of the season beginning to see 80.5, that was almost a slap in the face.
I don't know that it was a slap in the face because I kind of had them right around 83 to 85 wins.
But 5 wins in baseball is a good jump. Being 85, having 85 wins or 80, I mean, that's the difference in being under 500 or over 500.
Yeah, when you look at it from the bird's eye view, sure, but day in and day out, you can have a couple bounces here and there, and you can find 5 more games.
Same brand of baseball, basically, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I can get behind that for sure. No, that's totally reasonable. 610-632-0975 is the phone number to hop on board, and we're giving away FanFest tickets. And to tell you a little bit about FanFest, Saturday, September 18th, it's at Xfinity Live. FanFest 2021 is a free event. You will need a ticket to attend. It's presented by FanDuel Sportsbook and Live Casino and Hotel Philadelphia, the official hotel partner and after party of 97.5 The Fanatics FanFest 2021. The after party will be at Live Casino and Hotel Philadelphia. There'll be live entertainment, food and drink specials at Sports and Social. Sports and Social has a 52-foot LED display, 24 TVs, a FanDuel Sportsbook and Lounge, and more. Plus, you can enter to win one of 25 Samsung 75-inch HD TVs. Sign up now for live rewards and get your choice of free play, food credits, or merch. Play all night, stay the night at Live Hotel. Over 200 luxury rooms with 5-star accommodations. Charlie Manuel, a special VIP guest this year, courtesy of our friends at Landis Block, adult laser tag, dunk tank, and so much more. Must be 21 to enter FanFest, and a lot more guests about to be announced.
Oh, yeah, we've got a couple more. So you want to keep your ears peeled for when those get announced and call in immediately to get your tickets because the demand for these can go through the roof.
Oh, yeah, the people want the tickets. That's why we are the ones that help out the people. That's what we like to do.
Of course, this time slot has long been the giver of FanFest tickets. You hear Cuz and Chunis every day with their secret word and calling in. And just to mention, I'll get it. And we have to keep up that same respect for them as they're out on vacation. So, yeah, give us a ring. What's the FanFest?
Exactly. That's what we're doing here. We just have to, fulfill that role of Chunis and the Cuss. Right, the keywords. I love that. Don't say you want FanFest tickets. Just mention it somehow in secret code, and we'll put you on hold. With me? Just make a good point, and I'll give it to you anyway.
Make it even easier for the people.
Yeah, 610-632-0975. That day is absolutely going to be a blast. You're not going to want to miss out. All right, any more crazy stuff happening around the NFL world? It doesn't seem like anything has popped too wildly, except for this college football story. I got to throw you away. If you thought the ESPN one was bizarre, I don't know if this takes the cake. This is strange, though. South Carolina has to start their assistant coach at quarterback on Saturday due to an injury.
What?
They're going to start their assistant coach at quarterback. Now, we got to dive a little bit deeper here. Did this assistant coach play college football? You know what I mean?
The assistant coach, I believe, if I read it right, was a backup at North Dakota State to one Trey Lance.
Wow. How about this coming around full circle?
And now he's a graduate assistant at the University of South Carolina for the Gamecocks. And because there was an injury, he's going under center.
has availability left. He has eligibility with the NCAA. So, man, that's one of the wild stories you'll see in college football all year. And it's the first week.
I think I lost value, or this story lost a little value, knowing that he played. If he was a 45, 47-year-old coach that puts the headset on with the visor, and he's getting the nod to run out there and try it out there on a Saturday afternoon because he has 1 year left of eligibility or something, I feel would be a little bit more entertaining.
No, for sure. That would be wild if you had, like, can you imagine Nick Saban just saying, screw it, I'll do it myself and starting for Alabama? But still, my question is, what is going on with South Carolina and their recruitment that they could possibly be, before the season starts, out of quarterbacks to play? Like, where are their backups? Where's their emergency quarterback? They don't have, like, a wide receiver who was a quarterback in high school. Like, what is going on?
Do you think maybe they planned this knowing that he had a year, knowing his age, knowing he just came off of some college football experience the prior? Maybe?
I don't know how you could bring in a graduate assistant and say, hey, dude, if something goes wrong, you're starting for us. That'd be nuts to do. Who does that?
I don't know. I mean, this is such a bizarre scenario. I don't know. I guess you can't rule anything out of the equation. We just had a made-up team play on ESPN three times. So we're going to be talking about this being bizarre?
Nice little wild week of football news. How about this?
Yeah.
Isn't it great to have this season back?
For real. What's your stance on college football, by the way? For me, college football is my getaway. I put so much emphasis on taking notes throughout Sixers games, Flyers games, Phillies game. I analyze it so deep and so heavily that college football for me is my breath of fresh air, where I don't have to put that level of a brain power into assessing what's going on. I put my feet up, I relax, and I enjoy the game. Now, I care enough if it's Saturday 3:30, big time college football, SEC, maybe it's the Iron Bowl, maybe it's a big, big, big game. I'm committing my afternoon to watch, so I care about college football enough to do that. But I'm not diving so deep into recruitment classes and some of those other angles to the college football game. What say you?
Yeah, my college, I didn't have a college football team. We didn't even have a team. We were D3 for all of our other sports, and we didn't even field a football team. So I don't have that connection with the college football world that some people do. Went to a Penn State or went to like a Temple or a Rutgers, whatever it may be. So it's nice to have a sport that I'm interested in that I don't have the rooting interest, because I can enjoy the sport more purely than if I'm constantly worried about like the emotion behind my team winning or losing. So it's a layback, and it's more casual viewership, and it's the only thing I can really think of on that scale where I can watch it without the emotional tie. Like, there's no level. College baseball isn't that big. College basketball is another one. But those are the only two, college basketball and football, where I don't really have a team, but I still enjoy the sport to the level where I can casually view it and have fun.
So it's basically the college athletics in general. And I'm the same way with you. And I think that's probably geographic-wise. We don't have that in front of us. We're not in Alabama. We're not in Georgia. We're not in these SEC departments that their version of Eagles is their college team. It's probably geographic. We're probably in the norm, I would say, around here. Unless you go to Temple. I mean, are Temple fans diehard football fans and really sucked into that level of, of college football?
Talk to Pat Egan. Pat Egan is Temple nuts, and so is our John Kincaid. So the morning show, big little Temple contingent there. And, yeah, Temple's got some passionate fans.
I've lied to myself in the past saying, I'm going to jump on the Temple train. And I tried to do it, and by week two or week three, I was out of it.
Now, I'll do respect to Temple football, because they have built an all right little program. But if I'm picking a team, I'm going to go, like, SEC. If I'm going to pick a game to watch, probably, right?
A game to watch is a lot different than a team to commit to, though. Right? I mean, you're talking about watching a game on Saturday compared to saying, this is going to be my team that I support.
That's true. And you know what? Temple, the cool thing about Temple, though, is they have those players for a team that's not an SEC or like a Big Ten team. They've got a good number of guys that end up in the NFL. They have some talented guys on that roster. You see a coach like a Matt Rhule who works his way up into the NFL and is now a head coach of a team. So there's definitely draws in the area that can bring you into to following those teams too. It's just college football has so many teams and there's so many storylines. For me, it's hard to dive so deep into all of it without a vested rooting interest. I just like to casually watch.
I agree with you completely. Let's go to the phones real quick. I know we're up against a break here, but I want to get him in before Scott Lauber joins us, who covers the Phillies for the Inquirer. Let's get to Mike in Warminster. Mike, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey, how you doing, fellas?
How's it going, Mike?
Going good. Beautiful day out here. Ready for the Phillies to win tonight.
Love that.
Yeah. You just got to have positive attitude.
Yeah, even if it's fake and we don't really believe they could win the division, let's just enjoy it for what it is and pretend like there's some reality to it.
Hey, it's better to have baseball than not have baseball.
That's a great point, Mike.
So, yeah, I just wanted to call up and talk about the Eagles.
Okay.
So, I'm excited, finally getting Landon Dickerson off of the list, getting him back to practice, seeing how he's going to do. But I find it funny now how, there's this whole thing about, they're ready to trade the depth of offensive line. And it's for, sixth-round draft picks, seventh-round draft picks. And yet there's other people, like, why not trade instead of for those picks, try to trade for a player? Yeah, I've always been kind of dumbfounded by that.
Instead of trading Andre Dillard, what was that one more time?
I'm like Matt Pryor, like, why not trade for a position that you need depth for?
Well, because you're probably not going to get what you're... I mean, Matt Pryor is not going to bring you back much in return, so you're basically... Matt Pryor wasn't going to make the team, so you're going to bring in another player that is basically a bubble guy that might not make the team instead of a draft pick that can give you at least a couple years to try and make the team in that sixth rounder? You're really pulling your teeth, I guess, at that point what you're getting in return isn't going to be significant enough to put that much of an emphasis on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's the risk-reward thing. So, I mean, it's the thing. You can, there's just as much potential to hit on a 6th and 7th round pick as there is to maybe trade for a bubble-type guy who you know is...
Also, the other team is still trying to figure out if they're going to, make that team or not, that bubble guy. Thanks, Mike. We're running up against a break here, but we put you on hold for your Fan Fest tickets. All right, on the other side, we're going to be joined by Scott Lauber, who covers the Philadelphia Phillies for the Inquirer, to get his thoughts on where this team is and the run. I'm Hunter Brody, and this is Cuz Radio.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
1 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. This is the Anthony Gargano Show. I'm Hunter Brody, filling in all week long. Connor Thomas doing a fantastic job. He's filling in for the Chunis along with me. All right, the Philadelphia Phillies, they're 3.5 games back of the division lead. They're 3 games back in the wild card. And right now, joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline is Scott Lauber, who covers the Phillies for the Inquirer. Scott, what's going on, man? Thank you so much for joining us.
Sure, Hunter. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm watching some winning baseball, 4 in a row, 5 games in a row, a score in 7 runs total, which is just crazy considering what the bottom half of the lineup looks like. But we'll start here. Zach Wheeler pitched yesterday, and the August month hasn't been his best, and maybe a lot of that has to do with the innings pitched throughout. What have you seen in Zach Wheeler's performances throughout this month of August?
Yeah, you're right. It's been a little less consistent, a little more uneven. I do think you're probably right. I think the innings are starting to pile up. I think everybody in baseball wasn't really sure what to expect this year from pitching, in the sense that everybody had, a 60-game season last year and was going to have to readjust, right, to a full season and a full load of innings. So nobody knew what that was going to look like in terms of injuries and performance, and especially performance down the stretch, because they're well past what they did last year. So, yeah, he's getting up there. He's pushing. He's going to get close to 200 innings. He's on pace to sail right by that, as a matter of fact. And, you know, maybe that's a little what you're seeing, some of the dog bays a little bit. You know, he hasn't spoken about fatigue or put it on that, but I think it's fair to assume that there's some of that in play. And I'm sure that they will try as best they can to keep an eye on that as they get into September. But, you know, I think the pitching, you know, in a weird way, the starting pitching has been kind of the least of their issues, whether it be Wheeler. Kyle Gibson's been really good since they traded for him. Ranger Suarez has been really good since they put him in the rotation. Even Aaron Nola, it looks as though he's maybe sort of turning the corner a bit on his season. You know, really it's some other areas. And I think, you know, I think that Wheeler is still pitching well enough, I guess, to, you know, to keep him in games when he pitches. And that's really what they're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that stood out to me during the moment, I did not like him going back out for the sixth, but that's the difference in some of your top end guys last night, where he struggled through five. He had four walk batters. He had a lot of full counts and 87 pitches. But Girardi looks at Wheeler as, hey, we need you. We need you to go one more. And he had a really quick sixth. So were you surprised with him going back in there?
No, not so much. I mean, look at what happened in his previous start, right, where he came out for the ninth. And not only did he come out for the ninth, but then when he got in trouble in the ninth, Girardi stuck with him. And I think a lot of us felt like, you know, maybe the confidence, you know, you're certainly going to have confidence in your top guys, and you should, but maybe he took it a little too far. It just goes to show you, though, you know, how he feels about Wheeler. Like, in most cases, you know, he feels like, look, Wheeler is the best guy to get him through that particular inning. And I think that's how he felt there, you know, in the sixth. He didn't want to go to the bullpen that early. That was obvious. And, you know, so I think he was going to try to get Wheeler to get him through just a little bit more. And that's he's given that leeway to Wheeler. He gives it to Nola quite often. You know, those are guys he trusts to help him get through push through a situation where maybe with other guys he would go to the bullpen.
Yeah, I'm willing to give my top end of the rotation more of a leash for sure. It just didn't seem like he had it, but he proved me wrong. He went back out in that sixth and got the job accomplished. You mentioned Ranger Suarez. I'm just curious your thoughts on what you think he could be for this team, not only just this year specifically, but in general. Now, he's added the bit of the slider. He threw 13 sliders his last performance in his 95 pitches, which is a significant jump compared to his previous two starts. What do you think he could be if he added another pitch?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's got, especially if that slider keeps coming along, he has got a starter's repertoire. Now, you know, I was covering the series in Arizona earlier in the month, where that was the one start he made where he got hit a little bit, gave up a bunch of hits. A lot of them were singles. A lot of them were through the infield, but nevertheless, he was giving up hits. And, you know, you looked at it and you were like, okay, he's throwing his sinker. He's throwing his four seamer. And then he's throwing a changeup, but no curveball. There wasn't much slider in that game. And you began to ask yourself, like, okay, he's essentially a two-pitch starting pitcher that normally doesn't get the job done. Does he need to develop a breaking pitch? Does he need to develop something other than, you know, the fastballs and the changeup? That slider, as you mentioned, looks like it's a pitch that might be coming along. And if it does, you know, I think he could be an effective starting pitcher. But I do think he's going to need to continue working on it, or perhaps he's going to need to experiment with a curveball, just something, right? Another speed to kind of get everybody off of that sinker. That's really his bread and butter pitch, is the sinker. He throws it more than anything. And, you know, I was looking at his numbers the other day since he's been a starter, and, you know, he throws the sinker an awful lot, and he's got the second highest ground ball rate of any starting pitcher in baseball in the month of August, 60-something percent. It's like 64%. That's Suarez when he's at his best, right? He's going to put the ball on the ground. He's not going to give up home runs. He hasn't given one up yet in any of his six starts, which is pretty impressive. You know, so that's who he is. And, you know, I do think he's going to need to develop that extra pitch. I also think that it will help Ranger Suarez in the long term if the Phillies can shore up their defense, especially on the infield, because a lot of those ground balls that he gets would get gobbled up rather than getting through, especially the left side of the defense, can get better. So that'll be a priority of theirs as a team in the offseason to try to fix their defense, which we know is not very good. And, you know, he's the kind of pitcher where it would really help if they're able to do that.
Yeah, it would help him. It'll help Kyle Gibson. It would help Zach Wheeler. It would help a lot of guys that are, you know, pitching for some ground balls at times, for sure. All right, let's look at this offense, because as I alluded to, they have been scoring runs. They've scored 7 runs in their last 5 games, which is just crazy. Is this sustainable when you're overplaying the Jankowskis, the Millers, the Marchands? And I know you have to by default, but if we're looking at this race, the Atlanta Braves took care of business against the Giants. They lost last night, though, in L.A. Is this sustainable with utilizing this many utility players for as long as they have?
No, I mean, it's not. And I'm honestly surprised that it has gone on for 5 consecutive games now where they've scored that many runs with such a patchwork lineup. And, you know, I'm inclined to chalk it up. Well, I don't want to take anything away from them, right? They've obviously hit the ball well. They've kind of kept the line moving. Harper's gotten the big hits when they've needed him to. A lot of guys have gotten big hits when they've needed him to. Brad Miller had a few big ones last night. So I don't want to take anything away from them. They've obviously played very well. But I think you have to look too at who they're playing. I mean, they played Arizona over the weekend, played Washington last night, tonight, tomorrow. That is not a good team down there. That's a team that's very much rebuilding, very much in transition. Don't know how many of those guys you're going to see as long-term parts of the Nationals' future. And, you know, the Marlins over the week, coming up over the weekend, they have some decent, you know, decent pitching as we've seen over the course of the last few years, but also not a very good team overall. And that's okay. Look, they have a very, we've talked about their soft schedule down the stretch. It's really, really soft. I mean, you know, the gap between, in every season, you always have teams, especially down the stretch of a season, that are just playing out the string, right? But I think the fact that the trade deadline was so active this year, the gap between the good teams and the bad teams, to me, I have a hard time recalling, you know, a year where there are this many teams that really are truly bad teams. Arizona, Washington, they've got games left with Baltimore, who's terrible, Pittsburgh, terrible, Colorado is not a good team. They have games left with them. You know, it's a very soft schedule down the stretch. They're not going to see a whole lot of good pitching. So maybe that's the counterweight to the whole thing. Like, you look at their lineup and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense that they're scoring 7 runs a game with all the guys you mentioned playing every day. But they're also playing bad teams. So if there's, you know, if there's a way for them to continue on scoring a ton of runs, that would be the way to do it. I mean, I felt all along that the schedule was going to keep them playoff relevant down the stretch. It was going to keep them in it to some degree. And I think what you're seeing is that that's the case, that they're, you know, as long as they can continue to beat up on really, really bad teams, they'll be relevant. I mean, they'll be in it. I don't see them completely and totally fading out of the picture.
We're talking to Scott Lauber, who covers the Phillies for the Inquirer. All right, JT Realmuto, how concerning is the shoulder? And now on top of that, you're working with an ankle as well that they're listing day to day.
Yeah, it's a bit of a concern. We don't really know a whole lot about what's going on with that shoulder. I guess it was Gene Segura, right, that tipped us all off in the first place that he was dealing with a shoulder issue. And Realmuto and Joe Girardi have kind of downplayed it a bit since then. And this is part of the difficulty now in the times we're living in. You know, we're not in there in the clubhouse every day. Our access is limited to, you know, talking to players on the field and whatnot. And you don't, it's not that, you know, when we were in the clubhouse, it's not like you could walk into the trainer's room and see what was going on, but you could certainly have a longer conversation with a player at his locker. You could kind of bump into people where you may not see them the way it is now. So we kind of have to go a lot on what we're told and what they decide to tell us. And, you know, so as I said, Realmuto and Girardi have kind of downplayed it a bit, but the fact that, you know, one of his teammates decided to mention that he's dealing with a shoulder thing tells you that it's something that, you know, is a daily issue for him that he's got to at the very least receive treatment on or maintain or whatnot. And that's concerning. You know, also you don't just decide to move the guy to first base for the, you know, we don't know yet how the playing time will be divided, but it does sound like Girardi wants to play him quite a bit at first base down the stretch. And it's not something you'd normally do. There are other ways to keep his bat in the lineup, and, you know, he's not a guy who rests a whole lot anyway, plays more than just about any catcher in the league. So, yeah, I'd have to say that whatever's going on with his shoulder, you'd have to say that you're concerned about it. And, you know, hopefully we'll find out more about it as time goes on, whether it's going to require anything in the offseason beyond just rest. Hopefully it's just a rest situation. But this will be the third year in a row, right, that he's come to the finish line with some sort of physical issue, and whether it's his knee a couple of years ago or the issue last year with the hip or this year with a shoulder, apparently. And, you know, he's a catcher who's got four more years on his contract. So you're hoping that, you know, there are going to be physical issues. You're just hoping that he's going to be able to stay behind the plate the majority of the time, because that's really where his biggest value is.
With Rhys Hoskins out and Brad Miller getting overexposed playing every single day, although as of late he's had some of his clutcher moments, would it make sense to bring up Alec Boehm and play him at first to have maybe his bat in the lineup as a righty with JT behind the plate? Or would you rather have JT at first base with Marchand behind the plate? What do you think would be a better option? Or is Boehm just going to be AAA for the rest of the way?
So it depends on what you're prioritizing. You know, I think if you're prioritizing offense, I think it probably helps you more to have Boehm in the lineup and JT in the lineup together. And then, you know, if JT was healthy and could get behind the plate, 80% of the remaining games, then I think for an offensive standpoint, that's how you'd optimize your offense. But, you know, we've talked about how important it is that they catch the ball, especially with these starting pitchers who put the ball on the ground a lot. And, you know, if you're willing to sacrifice a little offense, maybe it's a better thing to have, you know, JT at first base, Marchand behind the plate. Then you can keep JT in the lineup every day and keep him maybe a little bit healthier if that shoulder's really kind of barking. So there's a lot in play, and I think, you know, as I said, I think we're going to find out more about JT's health based on how he's used down the stretch. And you know, it's interesting, you know, Girardi's reasoning for moving him to first is, well, we want to keep his bat in the lineup. And as I said, you know, his bat is in the lineup a large majority of the time anyway when he catches. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of moving parts there. I think the one thing that they don't want is they don't want Alec Boehm to come back here and sit on the bench. I don't think that helps them. Him or them long term. I don't think he's not someone who's used to coming off the bench, so I wonder how productive he would be in a role like that. Also, just from a development standpoint, you want him to continue to hit and play every day. And every time we've asked, it doesn't seem like they're inclined to pull him right back up. You know, the minor league season this year goes 2 weeks longer than normal, goes into the middle of September, September 19th, I think. Also, rosters can only expand to 28 this year, not 40. And because of that, I think you're going to see a lot of movement in September. Guys are going to come up and go down as they do all year long, because there's no taxi squad you're traveling with the roster expanded to 40. So, they can call him up, at various points. And maybe the plan is let him keep playing every day and call him up toward the very end of the minor league season. And maybe you're in a position at that point where JT can give you, you know, two solid weeks behind the plate, and you can get Boehm's bat back in there every day and go from there. It's going to depend on what they need at the time, how they're playing and how everyone is doing health wise to see how all the puzzle pieces fit.
Right. Absolutely. All right. One last quick one before I let you go. Bryson Stott, what are your thoughts on what he's doing right now, specifically in this month of August? Because there's nothing but great things about the damage that he's doing.
Yeah, he's having a really, really good month and a really good finish to the season. You know, it's funny. It's like he's having a really nice month of August, and his buddy Bryce Harper is like having, you know, good luck finding a better hitter on the planet right now than Bryce Harper with the months that he's had in August. We're not talking about him enough, to be honest with you, Harper. He's started 41 consecutive games. I think he's played all but five innings in those 41 games, and the numbers he's putting up are pretty crazy. I don't know why anyone's pitching to him. I really don't, given that there's not a whole lot.
You don't think Andrew McCutchen's providing enough support behind him there in that cleanup spot?
Do you? I mean,
no, absolutely not.
I don't know who would, right? I mean, like, I guess if Hoskins was healthy, that would be different. If Realmuto was healthy, that would be different. So anyway, I'm off on a tangent, but yeah, like, you know, Stott's buddy, Harper's buddy, Bryson Stott, he's having a pretty nice month there in Reading, and, it's good to see. I don't think anyone ever looked at Bryson Stott and questioned whether he would hit. I think most people thought he'd hit. I think there's still a question, though, about where he'll play, whether he'll stay at shortstop or move to second. He's played mostly shortstop, as far as I know. But, you know, I think, you know, look, it's good to see. They're hopeful that he will be somebody who could contribute sooner than later, meaning, you know, next year at some point, hopefully. And for him to finish strong, as he looks like he's going to do, you know, that's a positive thing in a farm system that doesn't have a whole lot of positive stuff going for it right now.
You nailed it right there.
He's certainly a guy who's opened some eyes.
Absolutely. Scott Lauber, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate your time joining us today.
You bet. Anytime.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So with Scott Lauber, covers the Phillies for the Inquirer. Join us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Comcast Business, every day in business is a big day. Let Comcast Business keep you ready for what's next. A lot of great insight there. A lot of great information. And what we'll do here on the other side, we're still giving away FanFest tickets, of course. 610-632-0975 is your opportunity to climb in. Right now is a great time as we enter the break, and we can discuss it all on the other side on top of the Eagles. And we're continuing to keep our eyes set on the cuts that's going down. 610-632-0975. I'm Hunter Brody, filling in for Anthony Gargano here on the Anthony Gargano Show.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Final segment of the Anthony Gargano Show. I'm Hunter Brody, filling in for the cuss. Mikey Miss coming up at 2 o'clock. 610-632-0975 to hop on board. Get yourself some FanFest tickets, of course. Now, we're going to check in on our Twitter poll, which is brought to you by Marvin E. Cans Heating and Air Conditioning. Marvin E. Cans Heating and Air Conditioning is open and able to assist you with any emergency service and replacement needs, including installation of air scrubbers and other air quality products. Visit MarvinEcans.com.
Thanks, Honor. So our Twitter poll of the day, what position group are you most interested in when it comes to the Eagles cutting their roster down to 53 players? Now, we only had four options we could put up here. So we have the wide receiver group, linebacker group, defensive line group, or defensive backfield. Right now, leading the way easily with 76% of the vote is wide receiver group. The linebacker group looks like they're in second with just 9%. The defensive backfield also has 9%, and just 6% is the defensive line group. So everyone's keyed in on those wide receivers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely the most intriguing one for sure, but it's interesting. I feel what's going to help this team win is the defensive line. Like, I can't wait to see what it's like with Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, with Kerrigan, Josh Sweat, Derek Barnett, and the way that Jonathan Gannon is going to utilize this front. We've seen one way for so long. We've seen Jim Schwartz just basically admit, hey, we need you guys to win up front. You win up front, we're going to be good, and that's the logic. Now you're going to see more creativeness involved. It'll be more unique. You'll see some more disguises involved. So I'm excited how that defensive line, it's still going to be your bread and butter. It's still going to be what helps you win football games when you do win. I have it as the defensive line group. Like I guess we know what's going to be there. So if you're just looking at it from an intrigue standpoint, but here's my counter. You're not excited about Fulgham or J-Jaw. You're excited about Jalen Reagor, Devontae Smith, and Quez Watkins. They're not a part of who's going to be cut, who's not going to be cut.
Yeah, it's a fair point. But then on the defensive line standpoint, there's not that many guys where you're too worried. The defensive ends, you're not too worried about anyone's future. Right. You're looking at Kerrigan, Sweat, Barnett, Brandon Graham, maybe throw in like a Jannard Avery if he's not going to play mostly linebacker. The defensive tackle has some guys that are on the bubble, but none of those guys are really huge impact guys. We're talking like Milton Williams. You're going to have the Fletcher Cox, Javon Hargrave set up. But those other guys aren't really huge name guys that I'm worried about. That's why I'm so zoned in on the wide receivers, because you have some young players. The guys who are on the bubble are going to end up having to have an impact on this team in one way or another because the wide receiver corps is so young. At some point, if Travis Fulgham makes this roster, he's going to be on the field on impactful snaps. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside could be on the field for impactful snaps if he makes this roster. So that's why I'm keyed in on the wide receivers more. I think the bubble players will have more of an impact than the guys who will be backing up a Fletcher Cox or a Brandon Graham.
Yeah, no doubt. No, you're absolutely right. I looked at it from a different angle when I went down my who's going to be strong to help you win football games, thinking of the defensive line. T.Y. McGill is a name, though, to look at for the defensive tackle. He's made some plays in this preseason. He's been raising some eyebrows. For same with Jackson from Coastal Carolina. He's made some noise on that defensive front as well. So there are some names to kind of look at in general with that defensive line.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are guys you're going to be interested in. I think their impact is a little bit further down the line, though. Like, there'll be guys that'll be nice to have, but it'll be like a Josh Sweat trajectory where they'll have some plays, and then they'll have a couple more plays in an enhanced role the year after and continue to grow. Like, the wide receiver room, they don't really have that luxury. They've got a lot of young guys. Like we brought up earlier in the show, the most tenured guy by games played on this wide receivers in this wide receivers room right now before the cuts is J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. He's got one more game played in his career than Greg Ward. Like, that's not a very experienced room. So I'm just so focused on the quick growth and development that's going to need to happen with those young guys.
That's actually mind-blowing. That statistic is actually crazy to think about. Should they have targeted a veteran to bring in here? I heard that debate for a little bit of time, though. Maybe they should go snag a veteran, and then you're thinking, well, what veteran? I don't know. Golden Tate's out there. Stop it. We're not going down that road. What would Golden Tate bring to the table that you're looking for a veteran so much that that's going to be the difference in anything?
No. Yeah, you already saw what Golden Tate could bring you when he was here, and it wasn't much.
Yeah, I find it comical. There's just really nothing out there. And if you're going to commit to this lifestyle of young, youth, raw talent, you might as well let them grow together. Have them take all the snaps. What snaps do you want to give a player? And it's not specifically Golden Tate, but just in theory, utilizing him in it. You're going to give Golden Tate snaps and take that away from who? You want these younger players to be out there consistently getting reps with Jalen Hurts, consistently getting reps with everybody else, and working to figure out what you have when you're basically looking into next year's situation of, okay, how do we utilize these draft picks?
Yeah, and the league is built around speed at the wide receiver position. So I know you want veterans out there, but you tried the veteran speed guy last year, Marquise Goodwin, and he didn't play. He opted out because of COVID. So you never really got a chance to see that. You tried it with DeSean Jackson. He didn't play much because of injury. So you have a nice situation here for a team that's in the middle of a rebuild where you have a young quarterback and young, speedy wide receivers who fit the mold of guys who have been successful in the league. And hopefully, if things go as planned, you have a core you can grow with for the next couple years. But again, these are guys that don't really have the luxury of waiting behind somebody proven. They've got to go out and play the snaps themselves this year.
Is it wrong for me to hope that we see some creativity similar to the San Francisco 49ers with the way they utilize some of this? I don't know if we're going to see that. And maybe I'm just defeated inside knowing how Doug Peterson operated his offense, but the unique way they use Ayuk and Deebo Samuel, and they just get creative with all this speed. I want to see that. I want to see end-arounds. I want to see Quez Watkins get the ball behind Jalen Hurts and then run it 50 yards up the field. I want to see that version of explosiveness with this offense.
Yeah, I don't think that's crazy because you look at it, like, who is the quarterback in San Francisco? They're starting Jimmy Garoppolo. They had him last year. He's a guy that's not mobile in the least. And here you've got a Jalen Hurts
who the defense is going to have their eyes on him. So if you're running those reverses, those flips, and you're getting the ball in the backfield in space to a Jalen Reagor, a Devontae Smith, a Quez Watkins, that's something they're going to have to account for staying home because Jalen Hurts has so much more athleticism. So what we saw San Francisco do, we can absolutely see the Eagles employ. Now, will Nick Sirianni do it? I don't know. We don't know what his scheme is to this point. All he's really told us is, I'll fit it to my players. So hopefully the way he fits it is realizing these guys have speed and trying to model it around one of the more successful offenses.
We're going to be breaking Nick Sirianni down so much little by little. There's so much to learn. Is he going to go for it on fourth down? Or is he going to be calling Jake Elliott's name a lot to kick it on fourth and three on the other side where we're accustomed to watching Doug Peterson easily go for it? I actually thoroughly enjoyed Doug Peterson's aggressiveness. I was a big fan of it. Were there times where it was a little too much for my liking? Yes, but ultimately he did it at an aggressive rate, but I was comfortable with his aggressive rate. I hope that there's some of that involved in Nick Sirianni. You know you want to grab as many points as possible. You're a new head coach in this league. Let's put up points and try and win that way. That could be some way of thinking for him. I hope he puts his foot on the gas more, though, than what we've seen in that one preseason game where he kicked 247s and a 50 with Jake Elliott.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I'm kind of watching the whole preseason. They didn't play starters at all. It looked like they wanted to get him out there in the second game, and then Jalen Hurts obviously had the sickness, and he could not get in, and it felt like they kind of turned that into a throwaway game, and then we know they didn't play anybody really in the third. So I'm not really putting any stock into the game plan they rolled out or the strategy that Sirianni used in that opening game with the field goals and being less aggressive. I think we're going to see a brand new Nick Sirianni when week one rolls around. I think it's going to be more, well, I don't think. I'm hoping it's going to be more of what we've heard reported from the joint practices where they owned the Patriots and Jets when they faced off.
Absolutely. We're probably going to be pleasantly surprised in some areas and maybe a little disappointed in others when just assessing his first handful of games. It comes down to, though, something that Doug Peterson was not able to do consistently, and that's counter the other team's second half adjustments. When the other team counters you and comes out with a whole new philosophy in the second half, what do you do then? How are you going to change your offense to beat the opposing defense's scheme that they switched? Is Nick Sirianni going to be thinking on his feet quickly enough to get his offense back into rhythm to annihilate whatever the opponent decided to do at their halftime?
Right. It's a lot of questions. This guy's the great unknown, and there's a lot of great unknowns about the Eagles season coming up, but ultimately it comes down to your head coach. We don't know much about him at all. Like, we don't know the scheme he's going to run. We don't know the aggressiveness. We don't know the adjustments. We don't know what he's going to wear on game day. Is he going to be a challenge flag in the back pocket, front pocket, sock?
I love that you brought this up. Over the weekend, I said something to Dan Fritz, who was producing the show that day, and I brought up how I analyze everything about this guy on game day. And I brought up the fact that he went no visor. And Dan goes, dude, what? You care that he's not going visor? Do I really care? No, but that's the level of intensity that I have with my binoculars on my TV screen to see what this new head coach is all about. I'm dissecting everything about his apparel to everything else that he does as the Philadelphia Eagles head coach. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, and it shows you how little we know about the guy, how we're nitpicking at everything. We're trying to find every little detail because ultimately we're three preseason games and a whole training camp in, and we've learned a little bit more. We've heard some compliments of Sirianni, some big ones from the likes of Bill Belichick, saying that he likes how he ran his practice and complimentary of that. But ultimately, we still don't know much about this guy in a game setting, so we're picking it apart. And, I mean, it's also Philadelphia crazy in us that we're worried about what he's wearing and the visor and everything like that.
I'm not worried about it, but it's a statement on who you are. If you come in with your Eagles Hawaiian shirt that you wore the other day on Friday.
That's a great shirt.
But we filled in for Mikey Mann. Yeah, that's a great shirt, but that's a statement that says something about you. I would say that my long hair or tattoos, that says something about me. There's a way that how you dress, how you put yourself in front of everybody in terms of apparel, demeanor, goofiness, this and that, it says something about you. We're finding out, not a visor guy. Maybe that says something about him.
I don't know what it says, we're learning each and every day. So it's just, it's another thing, and the theme of this Eagles season is going to be evaluation or discovery, however you want to word that. It's a quest for finding out what this team is from top to bottom, positions, coaches, how the GM did in this draft, everything like that. So that is the exciting part. While I said yesterday, I can't have fun in a season they're going to probably only win 6 or 7 games, I can be excited about learning things like that.
Exactly. But to me, that's fun. To you, that's not fun.
No, that's not
fun. The only way you have fun ever in sports fandom is just winning.
Winning games.
Which is fun.
You play the sport to win the game. Sure. You play to win the game.
Sure. I am not discrediting that, and I have a lot more fun when the team wins than when they don't. But from an analyzing standpoint, I thoroughly enjoy talking about them and watching them and finding out about them, result winning or losing. I personally, which once again, I know is a little bit more of an outlier. Maybe it comes with the job. Maybe it comes with the territory of what we do for a living. But the fact that it creates so much conversation, it creates so much debate, it creates so much about this team and talking points that watching the team, whether they win or lose, there's an element, in my opinion, of that being fun. Studying, analyzing, taking notes, seeing what they're doing. How does that change from week to week? What do they do in the second half? All that that can create conversation is a very exciting part. But just from a pure fan standpoint, take that element out. Yeah, of course, I want them to win football games. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to find out the deficiencies of the team and see what holes you need to fill. Like, that's an interesting part, and it drives conversation. It's something we'll obviously discuss here on these airwaves throughout the season. But it's not fun for me. If I come out and I find out that Jalen Hurts is not an NFL quarterback, I will not be like, oh, I had fun this Sunday because I discovered that Jalen Hurts can't play. No, I want the team to be damn good. I'm an Eagles fan.
No, I understand. So, that's
yeah,
fun.
The only thing that'll be fun for me, get over 500 and make some noise. And that'll be a fun season.
No, I understand. You're right. If Jalen Hurts end up being miserable, I'm not coming in here with the biggest smile on my face, excited I found that out, because the journey of finding that out was insanely, tremendously entertaining. Entertaining to me. I'm with you. I understand. But I enjoy the process of it. I enjoy the journey of it as well. From a job standpoint, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, you got a hell of a journey ahead of you this season, because we have a lot to figure out.
You are correct with that. All right, I do want to throw a few things your way on what Scott Lauber told us, who joined us a little bit earlier in the show about the Phils. Boom at first base. I feel right now I'd rather stick with Alec Boehm in the minors and just let him play out the season without toying him up and down and this matters, it doesn't matter, we're in a race, we're not in a race. I don't want him worrying and overthinking already than he already has. I'm cool with keeping him down, even though Reese is out. Because I bring this up, Reese Hoskins is injured. Brad Miller, you can't have him in there full time. You can't have him in there playing every day. He's a lefty bat that maybe you can hope and pray for a home run throughout a process, if you will. Is there a way to have JT behind the plate if this shoulder problem isn't as bad as they are claiming, which I'm starting to question that, and have Alec Boehm be your everyday first baseman right now, or do you keep it as is?
I keep it as is. Alec Boehm was just, he was lost at the plate as much as he was lost in the field by the time he got sent down. I don't know what changing the positions is going to do to him defensively, but he didn't have a great offensive year either, and when he got sent down, he seemed lost. Like, the camera caught him at one point mouthing that to himself, I can't hit, after striking out in one of the games before he got sent down. I don't know how much more he gives you at first base than Brad Miller, which is crazy to say considering Alec Boehm and his stature and what you expect from a guy who's 6'5 at a third baseman who should have power, but Brad Miller gives you more power than Alec Boehm would give you in the lineup.
Definitely.
I don't know if you can take... this is crazy. I don't know if you could take Brad Miller out of the lineup in favor of Alec Boehm, but that's, I feel, a fair statement at this point.
Oh, it definitely is a fair statement. And even though on paper, the Alec Boehm batting average doesn't scream, it's anything horrendous. He's hitting around 250 before he got sent down. It just didn't have that impact. It was probably the least, not that 250 is good, but the lack of impact that 250 really felt. For example, Brad Miller is hitting, I think it's around 213 or so at this point. I'll look it up just to be specific. He's hitting 226. So it has jumped up a tad considering he's been on a bit of a nicer stretch. So he's hitting 226. His 226 feels insanely more massive than anything Alec Boehm has provided you at 250, 260, 270, 280. Even when you look at a stretch where he was hitting 300 for a little bit of time, the 226 and the home runs that Brad Miller's given you feels like there's way more power to that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. He's hitting the ball out of the yard. He's playing the gaps. Like Alec Bohm, when you hit 250, but all of them are slap shots through the right side of the infield as a large third baseman, like it makes it feel less impactful. Whereas you bring in Brad Miller, who can actually hit the ball out of the yard, that's what the impact feels like. So I know he's batting a lower average. It's also part of it goes into he was playing sparingly. So now he's getting in a little bit more of a rhythm, having more playing time, I think plays into it when it comes to Miller. But I can't bring Bohm up right now. I just don't think mentally he's at a point where he can help this team.
Absolutely agree. And since they're hanging around, it only adds more pressure. If it was a time where they slipped so much where maybe they're 7-8 games back, 9 games back, and starts getting to that ugly territory, you can call him up and tell him not to worry about things. It's only intensifying because, well, whether the Braves lose or the Phillies lose or the Phillies win, and however it's going to shape up towards the end, they're hanging around, and because of that, it would be a too much pressure for him. I want to go to my DraftKings Sportsbook app here and check out the MVP awards. Bryce Harper. You think he can seriously do this, or is it just a little bit out of reach?
I think Tatis has it pretty locked up.
So here's the odds. Bryce Harper is, wow, he's got the fourth odds. I'm surprised it's that
really?
Hot. Yeah.
Behind who else?
So Fernando Tatis Jr. is minus 275 to win NL MVP. Max Muncy's plus 850. He's been unbelievable this
right.
year. Freddie Freeman's plus 900, and Bryce Harper's plus 1,000.
It's wild that they have Freeman after his start to the season that he had. He was in one of the biggest slumps of a former MVP in the history of baseball.
But the way that he climbed out of it was impressive.
Exactly, and that's why he was the MVP last year, because he has that ability. I think the reason that Freeman is ahead of him right now in the odds is just because the Braves are ahead of the Phillies in the standings. But it's wild that you're getting good money on Harper if you do place that bet. I still think even though he's undervalued there, he's not going to win it just because Tatis is he's the favorite.
Well,
he's going
think
to.
About what Bryce Harper would have to do to not only beat Fernando Tatis Jr. at this point, just looking at the odds, but to take down Max Muncy at this point as well. It seems there's too many guys you have to hurdle over.
I don't know about all that, because here's the thing. Like Tatis, Muncy, those guys are on powerhouse teams that were built to compete in October and towards the World Series. Harper's on a team that was supposed to be around 500, that lost a couple of guys, that's been struggling. And if he leads them to a playoff push while having the highest OPS in baseball, he might be able to leap them.
Yeah, but what if you win with 80? If you win and make a playoff push, as you bring up, that playoff push at what, 86 wins? Does that have that much stock?
Well,
in
he
it?
Doesn't have the pitching rotation that a Fernando Tatis has behind him. He doesn't have the pitching rotation that a Max Muncy has out in LA, where you've got a Scherzer, a Walker Buehler, who could very easily win the Cy Young. A Clayton Kershaw, guys like that. Like Harper is doing this, him and Wheeler. So I don't know. I think Harper has the ability if he stays this hot and the Phillies make it. But again, I don't think they do.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I just think it's too much, unfortunately, even though he is really playing some good baseball this year, and it's really it's so much joy on my face to watch him hit a bomb yesterday.
See, that is fun.
Yeah.
That we can agree on is fun.
So is analyzing Matt Moore's performance.
How about all that?
Well, guess what? We'll do that tonight, and we'll talk about it all tomorrow. On top of that, we will react to the Eagles' 53-man roster tomorrow as well. So I want to thank everybody who listened to the show today, who called into the show, got their Fan Fest tickets. We'll continue that all throughout the week. Absolutely. Connor Thomas, I want to thank you for such a fantastic job pushing all the right buttons. I can't wait for the next handful of days where we do it all again. All right, coming up next is Mikey Miss. Enjoy the rest of your day, everyone.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.